adequate notice of this meeting, as required by Chapter 231, PL 1975, has been provided by a public notice on February 8, 2018, which was posted on the bulletin board at the Roosevelt Post Office and the bulletin board in the Roosevelt Post Office and in the Borough Bulletin. In the Borough Hall. The notice was mailed to the Times and the Asbury Park Press. Roll call.
Ms. Phillips?
Here.
Mr. Hamilton?
Here.
Mr. Parker?
Here.
Ms. Parrott?
Here.
Ms. Sheehan?
Here.
Mr. Trammell is absent. And Mayor Malkin?
Here. Welcome, everyone, and I'm happy to report that the committees have been working diligently. As you know, we have aging infrastructure in town, as well as many other issues that need exploring and resolving. There's so much that needs tending to, many of which have not been tended to in the past. So little by little, we've begun a path to bring these issues to fruition. And I will let the committees, when it's their turn, inform you of what they have been working on. Okay, we come to public comment on agenda items only.
Okay, time in
705. Okay. Does anyone have anything they'd like to say? Public comment on the agenda? Bob? Name and address.
Okay. Thanks.
Name and address.
Robert Clark, Lake Drive. Regarding correspondence, there was a letter, which now is on the agenda, which I guess was just put on very recently, which came several days ago. It's very good that it's on the agenda. First, that it's listed. Second, it's also good that it's in the packet. But it's a little late in getting there. The reason why it's important that it not be late getting on the agenda is because it indicates those topics that it relates to. Basically, just three topics. So any member of the public that's interested in those topics could see that and then be able to say, this is a meeting that I want to attend because I'm interested in one of those three topics, and then be able to come to the meeting and see what happened to the letter, and then if during the meeting or in some subsequent meeting the contents of the letter were discussed, the issues raised by it were discussed, those people who saw it on the agenda and in the packet of information accompanying the agenda would be able to participate. Again, I know you're talking about little by little everything is being implemented to make government more participatory and open, and that's a small point. The main point is that it is listed, number one, and number two, it is part of the packet of materials. So that is progress, so thank you for that. Regarding the issues in the letter, it says it's from Maureen. That's my wife.
Yeah, there was some confusion there.
And basically, it's from RMIC 13. However, I guess the borough has designated that as being Maureen because of the fact that we're on some list to receive materials from the borough. So my wife corrected that, said make it Robert and Maureen Clark. And I think you've already got that communication from her, Kathleen. So just a small item to clarify. With regard to the three items in the letter, It says should be implemented immediately, but then it also calls for protocols to implement. So obviously, if you were going to pass protocols, you'd want to discuss them and figure out the details of those protocols. And that might be done in a committee setting. So I guess what I'm really asking for is if you don't want to implement any of these tonight, then will you assign them to committees?
I think they've already been assigned. At least I took on the assignment of looking at this and discussing it in administration. And I'm the chair of administration. And I think, yeah, the devil's always in the details. You have to have the protocols in place and you have to have the legislation passed to make these kinds of things work. And to make sure, and I think it's important that it be run through various council members just to make sure that there may be pros and cons that we need to address to make sure there's no unintended consequences to. But I appreciate that, and it's on our agenda for next administration meeting. Thank you, Bob.
Interestingly, the idea of being able to raise hands and be called upon to participate relates to that very thing. Because if, for example, you were to have a discussion later on in this meeting about that, and you were talking about, well, won't that be difficult because we'd have to have people get up and go to the microphone every time they raise their hands and we allow them to participate. Well, I might like to raise my hand at that point and say, why don't you have a remote mic that you can pass around among the public? And that would speed up the process of that kind of participation. But I couldn't do that if you couldn't call on me to participate.
Right.
So technically, I'd have to wait until the end of the meeting to have a public comment. And by then, you may have decided the issue. So that's just one example of how you could get some feedback from the public quickly and easily on in the discussions of these issues. And similar hypotheticals could come into play for these other things as well.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to the council. In my own mind, I thought the first one should go to admin and the second two should go to the middle one and the third one should go to finance.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was your thinking. Well,
it kind of should go to both committees probably because you'd still want to develop some sort of protocols for all three, even though two of them are financial matters. So it'll probably go through both committees, I imagine, depending on how finance wants to handle it. But certainly it'll bring it up in administration, and it'll be an open administration meeting because I would like to get more of the public's input on it too.
Now, in the first one, I know the borough is governed by Robert's rules, and I don't know of anything in Robert's rules that would preclude that from occurring. And my impression of Robert's rules is that they give strong discretion to the chair to control the meeting, and the only way that that can be taken away is by a vote of the entire council. So I think that given the small numbers of people that we have in attendance, usually from the public, that it's a situation where the chair could control that fairly readily.
Can I ask you a question, Bob?
Sure.
How would you anticipate or how would you suggest that a contentious issue be addressed in that way where, you know, there's a lot of give and take between the chair and the public who wants to comment on it, and
how
would that be managed?
Well, that would be my concern, Councilman.
Yeah.
I mean, once you start doing that for one issue, you pretty much have to do it for all issues, and then you have a situation where you have 200 people in here, 100 people in here, and then everyone gets to participate. I mean, the proposal, just so everyone's aware, if anyone hasn't seen Neil's, to allow members of the public to participate in council discussions by raising their hands to be recognized by the mayor, so they may address issues as the council focuses discussion on those issues. I mean,
so
the concern
can I just
is that
clarify that would be like throughout the entire council meeting, right? So not just the two public portions.
That's what I understood.
It would just be throughout the entire meeting.
That's correct.
Right.
Well,
that essentially makes anyone who shows up a member of the council's discussions, which, I mean, he's correct. There's nothing technically prohibiting that, but it's not something that I would frankly recommend for a number of different reasons. One, a rolling discussion can have any member of the governing body blurting out confidential information any time when you kind of get that kind of back and forth in disorder. It's why the meeting is very regimented. Two, I don't even know how you manage a meeting if 200 people show up here and then everyone gets to participate 5, 6, 7, 8 times on every issue that's discussed. I'm going to have to raise my rate, I think. And three, you know, just the principle of the matter, and Mr. Clark, I appreciate it. This is very open and transparent government. This is, you know, very far down the spectrum. You know, the agenda is obviously constituted. Every public meetings act requires public comment at every meeting and everything like that. But there has to be some sort of order to it. And the third, as I was about to say, is that, you know, these seven people are essentially elected to make the decisions and discuss them. You know, the public's participation and feedback is required legally on numerous things, including on ordinances where there's a specific public hearing on important issues, and that's why land holdings, all the important issues in municipal government go through that ordinance process to make sure the public gets three chances to speak about them, and the hearing is at the same time as the matter is discussed. So there is already kind of a rubric for what you're talking about. I mean, I would recommend to the governing body that you open up every single issue to like an ordinance-like public hearing. It becomes very precarious, especially when things are there's confidential information involved. Mm. The governing body makes decisions based on information that the public isn't allowed to have in certain circumstances. Mm. So participation in that regard isn't necessarily fruitful. So that would be my recommendation. But of course, as you pointed out, there's nothing prohibiting you from doing that.
Well, there are protocols that could be implemented where you would say if there are 200 people, you could put time limits. And you could also say if there were 200 contentious people there, that the chair could control it by not calling upon people who raised their hands. And
that's the issue that I'm worried about. Tonight, by picking on certain people and not others.
Well, they could say tonight we're not going to call on people because council has advised that there is there could be some problems with regard to confidentiality and that sort of thing.
But we're not allowed to do that either because the Public Meetings Act requires us to have some public comment at the meeting. Or you mean suspend the rolling discussion?
Yeah, I'm
can we move this along? Because as we said, it will go to administration.
No, I've done a lot of thinking about it because this is something that we brought up in a citizens committee as well, and we all had very good discussions about. Wouldn't it be nice if we could include the public and not have it so limited where you don't feel like you feel like you have to like you're caged, like you can't comment on something as it comes up to have a good fruitful discussion.
Most legislative bodies do that through the committee hearings.
So the committee hearings
are public and the residents can come and participate, but because there's not a quorum, there's nothing binding. Obviously council members are still governed by confidentiality. I mean, most legislative bodies do it through committee.
But that's something I would love to discuss with you in an open committee meeting, too, and try to work out if we can come up with recommendations for that presented to the council.
I'm just addressing your concerns that you just raised right now, and I think that they can be dealt with and that should be discussed at whatever committees there are assigned the task of discussing these matters. And then with regard to the getting of quotations, it is correct. Am I correct in saying that the borough can have a higher standard that is a lower threshold for getting quotations than what's required by law?
Yes.
Okay, that's all I have.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
Anyone else have anything they'd like to speak about?
Michael Tipton, I just had one question. Does anyone know where the American flag is? The other flags sit from here.
Oh.
Just wondering where it disappeared from. It's
a good question.
Yeah. Yeah, we didn't secede or anything.
Not that we know.
I'm probably Bob was saying, I think the thing you have to bear in mind is the principle of reasonableness, you know, where, you know, to the greatest extent fees possible, you know, to involve people, but, you know, reserving the right to maintain control of the meeting and not have something that's going to drag on forever and prevent you from getting things done.
Do other towns do that? Do you know?
Look, I don't know if any other town around the country does it. It's either no town that I've heard of does that. I know in New England there's directly elected, so it's direct representation in some places, small towns in New England. The town meetings. So that's the, really what you're describing is really direct democracy.
Whatever, 2 years ago when the former mayor appointed a mayor's advisory committee on an extremely contentious issue, which was the building of a firehouse, we had two referendums on it, and at that advisory committee, I think Bob Clark and Michael Tickham were both members of that committee, and I attended most of the meetings and listened to ones on recording. And the chair of that, Alan Malik, I think it was at Bob's request, that the public be allowed to participate exactly in that fashion. And this is, like, I think, probably the most contentious issue since I've lived, one of the most contentious issues. And it went extremely smootly.
That's what I would recommend, to the extent that anybody wants to involve the public directly in decisions and discussions, you do it through your committee. So if the committee is discussing a particular subject, a park or whatever, mm-hmm. bring people that live therein. And then have that kind of rolling discussion there where there aren't the strictures of the council meeting where everything's being recorded and minutes have to be subscribed. And, you know, it makes for a much more informal dialogue. I just don't know if that informal – I don't believe that informal dialogue works in this setting as a proceeding that's being recorded and has legal requirements.
Well, my point was that it does work. My point wasn't that it wasn't – they sat at the just like this and it was recorded – and it was very formal. It was really similar to a council meeting. It was not like a committee meeting.
It was about one issue, right?
Yeah.
But it was over the course
of the difference. My point is, if it's on one issue, it becomes a much more fruitful discussion because everyone's talking about the same thing the whole time. Here we have 10 different resolutions that if everyone here participated on seven times, times 10 people in the room, it gets out of hand.
I see that, but I guess I would want to go to the committees, but I think that it could be a work in progress.
Ultimately, it's up to you guys.
You want to say it? Okay.
Yeah. Just want to say, since you mentioned the New England town meeting, what the New England town meetings do, they meet once a year and they pass the town budget. They go through budget line by line and people vote on, you know, do you want this in the budget?
I'd be in favor of that.
Right. And then and they elect the selectmen, but they don't have every meeting that way. The selectmen run the town during the course of the year until the next town meeting. That's how it works.
Anyone else? Okay, public portion closed at 7:21.
Okay, I'll remind you.
What?
What?
And it's on silent. where are we? Okay, approval of minutes. So this is a little bit of a unusual situation.
There can be many more.
Yeah. In essence, there were many, many minutes from previous council meetings from last year, the year before, dating back.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, not 16, 15, and even before that, where the minutes were not either there are no minutes or the minutes weren't done. So Kathleen and Lori have been, along with the committees I talked about, have been diligently working to retrieve the minutes that are there and transcribe them, and we'll be bringing them to you as they're completed. And so on this agenda, we have current minutes, but then we have minutes from August 22nd, 2016. And the way it was described, we asked Greg Cannon for his advice, since I'm the only person at this table who was at the meeting of August 22nd, 2016, how that would work in approving or accepting And so, do you want to explain?
Sure. Forgive me, Mayor, I have to correct you.
Sure.
That's okay.
Sure.
So, we don't know that the minutes weren't done. We do not have them here on file.
I do know some weren't done.
Did the mayor know? Okay. But we have, officially, we don't know that they weren't done by the employee who was responsible for them. We don't have them. So, there are certain recordings that the clerk has located. One of which is from August 22nd, 2016, and so she transcribed those minutes from the recording. because the governing body is no longer constituted in the way it was on August 22nd, 2016, we're going to approve the minutes as a record of the borough, although for purposes of bonding or other issues where there's legal obligation of certified votes, we will likely have to reintroduce and readopt bond ordinances,
right,
mostly that have already been authorized and are going out to sale because the projects are underway. And so the certified vote for the certification on the bond, so someone will buy them, needs to be redone, and a certified vote needs to be taken. So that is the best way that we can determine, the clerk and I can determine to handle it. And we're going to go from there, and the clerk is going to continue searching, and I'm sure we'll locate things over time, but that's the best we can do at this moment.
I wanted to say for the public record that I'm really glad that just about every meeting we go to, very recent minutes are always being approved, and we're really keeping up on it, and I wanted to thank Kathleen and her staff for doing that. It makes life a lot easier when you're current with everything.
I can say for certainty that we went years without any minutes to approve. Years. So
it's a lot of work,
really
listening to everything and having the headphones on and making sure it's accurate. But
yeah, it's being done properly.
It's done well. Thank you.
Thank you. I agree with Mike.
With that in mind, would someone like to move the August 22nd, 2016 regular council meeting minutes? This is, again, not to attest that you agree.
Yeah, we don't have to have been at that meeting.
Right. This is just accepting them as
approval
a record.
Approval of the minutes as a record of the borough, as prepared by the clerk from the recording of same date.
Okay. I'll make a motion accordingly.
Second?
I'll second.
Any discussion?
I have a question. This bond ordinance, 16018, I have a suspicion that was a bond ordinance that was defeated at a referendum.
No.
Which ordinance was it? What was the title?
16018 is a bond ordinance providing for various water sewer improvements, appropriating $128,000, therefore authorizing the issuance of $122,000 bonds and notes to finance a portion of the cost thereof, authorized in and for the borough of Roosevelt County, Monmouth State, New Jersey.
I believe 20 was the one that was defeated down, but 18 was not.
The 20 was
1620,
I believe.
And that was also for water sewer?
I don't have it in front of me, but it was water sewer, yes. I don't know the title for that. I could go get it if you want. But what it is this bond was introduced, and then on the 9/12 meeting, it was adopted. I can't find any record for 9/12. The bond council needs me to complete the paperwork, but I can't complete it because I don't have.
We're going to have to redo that bond ordinance. So this governing body is going to have to vote on it again.
There's no paperwork, no audio from
September
12th.
So just to be clear, you're not approving the minutes. You're not saying I approved that bond ordinance, I thought it was a good idea, or anything like that. All you're saying is the clerk listened to the recording and wrote down that that's what happened at the meeting, and she's attesting to the fact that it's true and accurate. And these bond ordinances, because we do not have the minutes, we don't have any recording for the next meeting after that where it was public hearing and adopted, we're going to have to redo it because bond council cannot issue the bonds.
What if money was already spent on them?
We have to, as a formality here, retake the vote and then send it to bond council to cover the obligation, or the borough will have to fund it itself in the general fund.
Because there was money,
which we don't have,
on certain bonds put. I know that with the when the bond was defeated for water sewer, then, and Mike and Peggy would recall this, a different bond that was never passed for that purpose was used.
I don't know what the history is, but But I know when the bond council calls me and tells me that I need a certified vote to make sure that I can sell the notes to pay for whatever the borough is asking for the money for, that's what we have to do.
Yeah.
I have no idea.
I don't know if that was that.
But the money is already spent,
or not.
So.
But it was. We'll have to look into it and see whether or not that bond was, I think it was used. I mean, things were charged to that bond.
My understanding is that things have been charged against the encumbered, that the bond council is, and because it was, a bond ordinance is only an authorization. You don't borrow the money and put it in the back room someplace.
Right.
Then you draw on it, like a line of credit, and they sell notes as you draw on it. So they're in the process of selling the notes, and they can't sell, give the certification to the person who's buying the notes that says, the governing body officially approved this, because we only have the certified vote or recording of the vote for the first reading. We don't have it for the adoption.
Right.
For so that ordinance.
So when you look
so at the person who's buying the note, it's like if you wouldn't buy your house if they didn't give you a deed.
Right.
So when you look at a lot of the bills that probably would have already paid for repairs, emergency repairs to the water and sewer utilities, some of them may have been charged to that bond because that's how these bonds work, like lines
right.
of credit.
Mm-hmm.
And you charge it to that bond. Otherwise, we'd have to raise people's rates each year, depending on how what happens in the utilities. This way, it spreads it out over time. It makes sense.
Well, you have to raise the money in cash. Otherwise.
Yeah, exactly. Cash. Yeah, in 1 year.
Yeah. So I mean, I don't know if this is the first one that's come up.
Yeah.
I don't know if it'll be the last one. I know that the bonding history and Roosevelt is. Very colorful, so I don't know.
I don't know what it is.
I just know that bond council called me up and has a big problem. So
Maureen, it was 1622 that was defeated. 22 was defeated
for the water sewer.
Yeah.
In the referendum.
This is 18.
Yeah.
And the 18 might have been used to pay one of our utility engineers, maybe two.
That's the full bond ordinance.
Where did we leave off? We need a roll call?
We have a first and second.
Yeah. Okay, so let's have the roll call.
Ms. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yep.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Ms. Parrott?
Abstain.
Ms. Sheehan?
Yes.
Okay, so it does pass.
Do I have a motion to approve the January 22nd?
You talk so much about bonds, I said, no, you need 5 votes, but you don't.
January 22nd, 2018, regular council meeting minutes. Motion?
I'll make that motion.
Second?
Second.
Discussion?
Nice job by the borough clerk, though. It's very accurate to me.
Okay.
I was at that meeting.
All right, not being any discussion, then we'll have a roll call.
Ms. Phillip?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Ms. Parrott?
Stain, I wasn't present.
Machine?
Yes.
Okay. So, again, 4-0
is good. Correspondence is the email that was discussed in public portion from Mr. Clark and Mr. Cragen. We come to resolutions. Someone like to move resolution 18-36, payment of bills?
I'll move that.
Second?
Second.
Discussion?
I reviewed the bills, and I asked that 2 bills be pulled for further review. One was a reimbursement for travel expenses for a part-time operator in the utility system. And we have to look at what our reimbursement policy is for travel expenses for these positions, because the person put in for a whole year of 2017 for travel to and from internally in town with their own personal vehicle. And I don't know what we have as far as policies on that, so I think we're going to take a look at that and see how that works. The other one was for, what was the other one for?
Vital.
Yeah, and we transitioned over from Vital, who handled our, I guess it was our water and sewer bills and our tax bills and that kind of thing, and we transitioned over to Edmunds for software. And I think that bill should actually go away or be reduced because we're really not using them anymore, but the bill stayed the same. So I spotted that when I looked at the bills. I asked that be pulled, and I think Anna called them to see if she could get an adjustment or have it stricken. So we'll see how that works out.
I know Anna gave me an update on that.
Yeah.
And Sam says it's needed for at least, you know, a year, because he's got to pull information, because Edmunds doesn't have the old information, so it's still needed. But they will do it at a reduced rate, so she's going to get that.
Okay.
Well, as to the first one, the reimbursement for travel expense, it looks like it's the first one on the list.
Yeah.
Is that what you're talking about?
Yep.
316.94. I don't have that reimbursement document at all in the packet. At least it's not in the order of what the bills. It's not the first one, and I don't recall seeing when I went through them all. So could we actually have that too?
Then I don't know if it gets paid on a voucher, and that's why you don't have it. I'd have to ask.
Yeah, I think Anna had to pull that. That was on a voucher, which was in her system or something. So it wasn't actually like a bill that was submitted. It was a voucher that was put in. But we can get a copy of that.
Yeah, because when I did a reimbursement for the League of Municipalities Convention, I had to fill out a form.
Yeah.
Yeah, you did a voucher.
So I would ask that anything like that be included to document whatever the expense was. And then we may know what that was for.
Well, I could tell you what it is if you want to know, too. 10 miles per week for travel to and from one plant to another internally in town. So that's 5 days a week times two. It's 10 miles a week times 52 weeks. Comes out to 520 miles. Also, hydrant flushing four times a year, 12 miles to go from hydrant to hydrant on a quarterly basis. That was 48 miles. So you're talking about, you know, 568 miles for the entire year in travel expenses for 2017. That's basically it.
Well, we'll have to study.
We'll look at it.
To see whether we've ever, you know, have we paid for this kind of travel expenses in the past? Is it, you know, is it in our employee handbook that,
right,
that the borough pays or the employee pays? Or, you know, there's a lot to look at. This voucher that was submitted brought up a lot of issues that we, right this minute, don't know the answer to.
So would that go to a committee, perhaps, to look at?
I'm not sure. Maybe.
Well, I asked Anna to check to see what we had in any employee manuals or any legislation that's on the books to see what our policy is on it.
Our CFO might know also.
And if we don't have a policy, we have to look at what our practice has been for that, too, and to take it from there. And then I'll trust the advice of our legal counsel, too.
So that would come back to the whole council, then? Not to.
If it needs to be approved, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
It's not approved yet.
But I mean, it would, in terms of, like, not a committee doing the investigation.
Committee could do it, too. It doesn't matter. Wherever you want to discuss it, you know.
Well, did you ask Anna already to
look
do
at
some research?
Yeah, to look at
so
policies
wait,
and see what's on the
see
books.
See what she finds and, yeah, and speak to George Lang, and then we can take
why
it
don't
from
you
there.
Just
they may have some.
Why don't we just ask Anna to email the entire governing body saying, mm-hmm, please do not reply to all and provide the answer to the question. And then
okay. Could you forward that to Anna? Okay, great.
Yeah, and Anna may talk to George.
Yeah.
So
I had a question, not about the charge, but from Roberts Engineering.
Mm-hmm.
There's one for Green Acres review comments. I mean, just for $165. But on the bill, it refers to land swap. So I just want to know, Greg, did you initiate that to as far as trying to find out, you know, the review of the land swap? I just didn't know. I just wonder who.
No.
And Maureen mentioned this to me the other day, and I took a look. since we're looking, that's one of the things on the community development's table, and we've been waiting with the switch from one borough attorney to another for the review, you know, the lawyer review, to get a response to see what the advice and suggestion is. So I was just curious where that came from, where that was generated.
I don't know.
Is there a date on the bill, Rob?
I've been quite busy, but I haven't gotten to
it. No, I thought, wow, that's really good. 124, and it says Green Acres Review Comments, but on the bill itself it says land swap. So it says specifically.
That's very recent then.
Yes,
a few weeks ago. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that two of the Roberts Engineering bills are from 2017. They're from last year, some sewer utility studies that she did that was one of the bigger expenses, and a tax map that she worked on.
So maybe can we ask,
does
Anna?
That say it on here?
Sorry.
Yeah, it's on the...
is the DEP corresponding with us regarding that issue?
I'll bet you they are.
Because if she got a piece of correspondence from Green Acres division in the mail, then she looked at it and did whatever she had to do.
Yeah.
So let's find out, you know, what occurred.
Yeah, I don't know.
Mike, okay. Do you want to call her?
I'll call her. Yeah.
Well, what I'm saying is, you asked me if I did that. It may be initiated from outside of here.
Yeah, I was just wondering because...
If it's an ongoing issue.
Yeah.
Well, on that point, I did call Roberts Engineering because I looked at that also. But I guess the broader concern that it raises in my mind is what the protocol is for professionals' time to be used.
Can we just roll back to this question? Because I think you're getting into the larger issue, right?
Well, that's why the issue was in my mind.
Yeah.
That is the issue in my mind. That is exactly
but to
it.
Say
which is... Which
but
is
do you have an answer from Carmela about why she did this report? Who asked her for this
report? She said that because historically she has done things regarding the land swap. And that's my understanding. And my question was, well, I think this council should have a protocol on when professional time
because this was
is
not
used.
Directed by any committee or the mayor or anybody.
I'm not. I wasn't criticizing her at all, and I'm not now.
No, but
I'm
just
wanting
to find out
how she was directed to do this. She took it on her own.
I'm just, and I, you know, I don't want to be challenging her bill. I think she does. It's very fair. It's a small amount. But the concern that I just still do have is that I think there should be a protocol or a mechanism for when professionals' time is used and the borough incurs an expense for that time. And I don't know what that is, if it exists or not. I think we should have one. And then the other question regarding this bill specifically is I have concerns about whether the person, the beneficiary of the land swap, should be sharing and or paying totally for the expenditures that result from the land swap. In other words, the owner of the property that's getting property, I think at least there should be a discussion here that would decide why.
Marie, that's a huge issue. Can we just put that off until, because that.
No, we can, obviously, but it came up, and that's why I'm raising it.
I did want to say that that's a concern that I've had, and I think other council members have had, as far as, I mean, this is no different than purchasing anything else. It's money that's being expended, and there should be a protocol, some sort of protocol, guidelines as to who can initiate.
I would like to call Carmela to find out for myself where this came from.
Good, do that.
And speaking to the questions that are coming up, that's all related to the review that we've asked our attorney to do. We're not deciding anything. We want to hear what their advice is. I had heard that our last attorney did come to some kind of conclusion, but he never reported that to me. So when you have you been in touch with Ira to get, do you have the materials at hand from the land swap, Greg?
Not yet. I've not reviewed that issue.
But you have the materials from Ira, or I'm just wondering where. Okay,
they're in the borough hall.
Okay, but just to say that those are among many questions that we'll address once the attorney has reviewed it, and then we bring it to the committee and discuss it, and then bring it to the council.
Yeah.
So it's I was only asking because like why did this pop up, and I'm happy to follow up and call Carmela and find out, you know, why she did this particular thing. So that's all.
But I've had some concerns this week as well for some of the professionals being called without it going through committee or bringing it to the council table, just randomly being called and asked to perform work that would generate a bill. So I agree, there has to be some type of protocol in place. I thought we did have one. I thought it was just sort of decided by committee or bring it to the table. But if that's the case, it hasn't been followed. So I do think we should probably institute some kind of more formal protocol to generate a bill from mm-hmm. our professionals.
Would that go to administration or finance?
Maybe finance, because it's bills.
It's probably both. If you're going to legislate.
That's not fair. Finance and administration do everything.
Well, if you're going to spend money and you're going to regulate things through legislation, which is our job as legislators, I guess it should. Yeah.
We would put that on a.
Yeah, who can generate a bill, and how do we go about doing
yeah.
that? Yeah,
because it has come up as recently
yeah.
as this week.
No, it comes
so
off. It comes
let's
up
pull
off.
That bill too, and I'm going to call Carmella.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Do we do roll call for payment of bills?
No. I want to get back on what bill is being paid.
The one it's 18-00052, Green Acres Review Comments for $165. Roberts Engineering.
Well, we just want your legal advice. I know we don't have to follow it.
I don't have your legal advice. I have personal advice. These people work for you, no one appreciates a protocol more than the professional, him or herself, because then I know the bill's going to be paid. Right? If I go out and I go around and I do work and then they find out there's a dispute later about whether it was authorized or not, that's like the worst nightmare for me because I wasted my time. There's half the governing body upset with me. So I'm all about that. But at the current time, you don't really have a protocol, and the professional sent you a bill according to the – or you don't have firm protocols, and, she sent you a bill. My personal advice is, it's $165. I think you should pay the bill and call her rather than not pay the bill and call her. Because I'll tell you, I'll tell you quite frankly, I'll take kindly to clients that pull $165 bill.
Right.
That's just my personal advice.
Well, I agree. After I spoke with Carmella, I wasn't going to bring it up here because I was completely satisfied with that it should be paid. And if we don't want her to do, if we want her to do work only if there's a procedure that's followed, a protocol, then we need to tell her in advance that we're going to do it that way. So I was satisfied. I'm more than happy to support paying it.
I do it all day, Robin, for $16,000, but I just don't think
it's fine. So we're going to pull the voucher.
No, we're not pulling it now.
No.
Not Carmella's bill. That's a bill. No, I meant
okay.
I meant the bill that was paying the travel voucher.
Right.
So that's the only one.
So you were pulling
just the travel
voucher.
The bill
voucher.
Did you have another bill you wanted to pull?
Well, it was that one in Vital. I think she already pulled that. I didn't sign the vouchers for him either.
Mike, you're pulling Vital, right?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you were satisfied with Kathleen's.
No, they're going to adjust it.
Okay.
So we're pulling Vital.
We're pulling Vital
and
the
travel voucher.
Yeah,
the
travel voucher. Okay. Travel voucher.
Okay.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Okay. Roll call for payment of the bills.
Payment of the bills, and we're pulling 18-00086 and 18-00090 and 18-00091. Those are the POs, okay? Purchase orders. Those are for Vital, the last one
right,
that
got
I gave
it.
You.
Yep.
So it's on the record. And the other one is Ali. Help me with his name.
Abu Huran.
Thank you. Ms. Phillip?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Ms. Parrott?
Yes.
Ms. Sheehan?
Yes.
Okay, so it does pass.
Would someone like to move Resolution 18-37?
I move Resolution 18-37.
Designating the First Constitution Bank, Hightstown, as the depository for the Borough of Roosevelt. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Ms. Phillips?
I'm sorry, what are we voting on?
Designating First Constitution Bank.
Sorry, is that the one? Wait a minute. Oh, the signers is the next one. That's what I had a question on. I'm sorry, I was just trying to get to my... Which is the one that does has the list of the committees? Which resolution is that? The names of the signers. That's the second one?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Ms. Parrott?
Yes.
Ms. Sheehan?
Yes.
Okay, Resolution 18-38, designating signers of checks for the Borough of Roosevelt. Signer.
I'll motion that.
Second.
It just seems, it seems incomplete. I mean, because we don't have the entire finance committee on there. Is that true? I can't find it. Sorry. It's just some papers.
1838.
Yeah.
But do you need the entire finance committee on it?
Well, I was just wondering, because it's not the...
Well, that's just my question to throw out.
Yeah, my question, too.
Well, we don't have a finance committee fully... There's only two people on the finance committee now.
Well, that was my question. Do we need the,
yeah.
The finance committee is to be finalized and completed at some point, and do we need to have all the names of the finance committee?
Well, I was finance chair for most of my tenure on the council, and the whole finance committee did not. It was the finance chair, the mayor.
Well, I think it says the members of the finance committee, if I'm wrong. I'm just asking because I just saw that not the entire finance committee is complete, and I thought that Maureen was the finance chair, so I was also wanting some clarification.
She wasn't.
No, I'm not. I'm not on any committees right now, and I think...
Well, you were going to fill in.
Right, but by the end of the meeting, but as of right now, and when this was printed up, she was not on finance.
I just think it refers to somebody who's on the finance committee, and I said, if you need me... Go like this. I'll do it.
Oh, Michael has hand up.
Yeah. Yeah. talk to the chair.
I believe all the finance committee members have their signatures on the card. I signed it, I know.
Yeah, and then it should be okay.
I'm the finance committee chair and I was on the finance committee. I signed it.
I know I was the only one that ever signed anything, so I didn't.
This came back way back.
We just changed our protocol. Now anybody can raise their hand, you see.
No, I don't care, so I don't know. What I'm asking is, should it not?
Should it be?
It's 1838. Should we, now that, can we revise this right?
Yeah, you can move to amend Resolution 1838 as presented to include the finance chair. And then pass the resolution as amended. Mm-hmm. And before you certify, put Maureen's name on it.
Yeah.
Go sign it at the end.
Yeah, all the members of the finance committee. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So do we have a motion
on
this?
Only three anyway.
As amended?
Yeah, three.
All right. Well, because sometimes we worry about if those three aren't available. Like then
that gives you eight people.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, then I make a motion to amend the...
Resolution 18.
Thank you. To include the three members of the finance committee.
Soon to be finance chair.
Yep.
And who was the second on that? Was I the second, or was somebody?
No, Maureen was.
Maureen, do you want
to? I'll second that amendment.
Okay.
On favor.
Aye.
Aye.
We're doing a roll call.
So it's an amendment. So you roll call the final So now we move 1838 as amended. Do we have a motion?
I will take that motion.
Second?
All in favor?
No, we'll call, please.
Oh, God.
Okay, now we're back to Ms. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton.
Aye.
Mr. Parker.
Yes.
Ms. Parrott.
Yes.
Ms. Sheehan.
Yes.
Okay, Resolution 1839, amend Resolution 1807, consent to appointments for 2018, borough officials for school crossing guards. What happened was there is a substitute guard whose name did not go on the at reorg, so that's why this has been amended to include the substitute crossing guard.
I'll move Resolution 18-39.
Second.
Have a discussion?
Sure.
I think his Roni is spelled incorrectly. I have your son's Facebook. It's A-G-Z-R-O-N-Y. So there's no I at the end.
No I. Okay.
Thanks, Cody.
Roll call.
Sure.
Ms. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Ms.
Parrott?
Yes.
Ms.
Sheehan?
Yes.
Okay, Resolution 1840. This is a mouthful. Ratifying an awarding contract for the emergency repair of a final sludge tank pump in the wastewater treatment plant of the borough of Roosevelt. Do I have a motion?
I'll move 18-40.
And I'll second it.
Roll call.
Ms. Phillips?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Discussion? Okay, roll call.
I'll start again. Ms. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Ms. Parrott?
Yes.
Ms. Sheehan?
Yes.
Resolution 1841, authorizing the County of Monmouth Mosquito Control Division to conduct aerial mosquito control operations within Roosevelt Borough. Someone like to move that?
I will move that.
I'll second.
Discussion?
Yeah, I just have a question. Do we usually do that?
Every year?
Yeah.
Forever. Otherwise, we'd be getting to death more than we are.
And does anyone know what the nature of the pesticide is?
Yeah, that I've always asked that and got MSDS sheets and all kinds of safety stuff on it, and they claim it's perfectly safe to all animals except the intended victims, which are larvae, I think. So I'm guessing it's fine if you trust.
You have to believe. But I was going to say, you just have to.
Yeah.
Well. Councilman Hamilton satisfied, then I'm satisfied.
They do send those MSD, what are they?
MSDS sheets, yeah. Material sheets.
I think it must be fairly safe because we have a lot more than we used to. I think it kills as many as it used to. And they used to come by, fly over, you didn't see a mosquito all summer.
Yeah, and there may be a trade-off because they carry, you know, illnesses and all kinds of things. So,
yeah.
You know, maybe the lesser of two evils.
Where are we? Okay, that was discussion. Roll call.
Ms. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Aye.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Ms. Parrott?
Yes.
Ms. Sheehan?
Yes.
Resolution 18-42, authorizing a shared services agreement with the Millstone Township Board of Education for supplies for the year 2018.
I move resolution number 1842.
I'll second.
Discussion?
What are the nature of the supplies?
Uh-huh.
Well,
good question.
We met with them, with the representatives of the Education Board of Education, They had everything from paper. You know, they can buy paper much more cheaply than we can, much more, you know, inexpensively. What else was it, Mike? They had a host of things.
Well, a lot of paper, sharing of some services and employees that they have,
right,
that we can get at a very attractive rate per hour for HVAC. So if we have any heating.
That's the next one.
That's the next one. Okay. Well, there's, yeah, they buy paper by the truckload.
Yeah.
And they said we can piggyback on. They'll give
right.
us the same price that they pay for
yeah.
paper. And we're using a fair amount of paper, so it may pay for us to start looking
yeah.
at it. But we don't want to stock too much because then it might walk. So we like to keep a minimal amount in our closet at any given time.
There's more than paper. I have it written down. The
media yeah, all kinds of supplies.
Yeah. Supplies.
Yeah.
Supplies.
Yeah.
Supplies. Yeah.
Probably paper towels.
And you need to run
yeah. yeah, paper towels.
Much.
So it would probably minimize, I'm hoping, any purchases from Staples?
Yeah, well, that's part of the goal, and to get a lower unit cost to, and to, again, be part of a shared services agreement.
So does this mean that there would be a directive to the staff to utilize this unless something else is cheaper?
Well, we're just going to be realistic about it. If we can get supplies from them that are much less expensive than wherever we were getting them, then of course. And then if there's something that we need that they can't supply or it's more expensive, then, you know, it's just going to be basically using common sense.
I'll see if I can get you a list of everything, what they have. It's limited, but for things that they buy in bulk, I think it pays for us.
Oh, I'm supporting it.
Yeah,
I'm completely supporting it.
I knew you would.
Yeah, I'm just
yeah.
I just wanted some
hoping that it will be used if we approve it.
I thought this was for the school. This is for Borough Hall?
Yeah.
Okay. You can piggyback on to any shared service.
Okay.
You can share service with schools.
So that's better than shared services with the Borough of Millstone, for example.
Well, actually, Millstone has a shared services, the school system has a shared services with our school system.
That's what it's good.
For this kind
yeah.
of thing, too, and we're piggybacking onto that and getting the benefit of some of the lower
yeah.
cost goods. So.
Mm-hmm. They That's buy paper.
Well,
everything they buy is in quantities
yeah.
so much larger
and
than.
And it is, I mean, my own experience of working for the federal government, things like this are much, much cheaper when you do them in bulk
yeah.
than going to Staples and buying
them.
Well,
we do have a little bit of a storage problem here. That's why we can't buy things too much in bulk. We don't even have our small meeting room anymore because the files are in there temporarily. And so we definitely have a storage problem.
Well, speaking of that, even though it's out of turn, I'd like to commend, I don't know who it is, but whoever got rid of, I guess it's Councilman Hamilton, got rid of that $400 a month expense.
I'll
for
tell
that.
You who did a lot of work on Dave Curtis, who's here in the back, spent a hell of a lot of time as a volunteer before he was a Public Works employee, and then as a Public Works employee, along with Greg Defoe, in clearing out that and getting rid of that $450 a month is what it cost
yeah,
us just
for the trailer
yeah.
that used
yeah,
to be out there.
Yeah.
And
right.
freeing up parking spaces, which is great.
Mm-hmm. And how many years was it there? At least two.
I don't know, but they did a lot of work, and it was good work, and it saves us money. You know?
Well, sorry, it's out of turn, but I just wanted to make sure I brought it up. I commend all
I didn't
of
lift
you.
A single box.
Yeah, Public Works really handled that with Mike.
Thank you.
They did a nice job.
Well, I just
okay.
say shared service and buying in bulk is always good. So.
Mm-hmm.
Resolution 18-40.
Wait.
Ms. Phillip?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Ms. Parrott?
Yes.
Ms. Sheehan?
Yes.
Okay. 18-43, authorizing shared services agreement with Millstone Township Board of Education for electric, HVAC, and mechanic services.
I'll make that motion.
I'll second.
Discussion?
How does this interact with what, compared to what we're currently doing? Is this new or is this?
Well, they have
no,
a lot of equipment that
we
have.
We were using it.
Yes.
We were utilizing
You're
the shared services
it.
Agreement. It needed to be extended.
Okay, thank
yeah.
you.
And the hourly rates, again, for the professionals were much less expensive than we have been paying.
Great.
That's
and they have machinery and that we don't even possess here.
That's true. Thank you.
They can even do auto repairs, so if there are any municipal vehicles that need to be repaired, it can be done at their shop that they have in Millstone. So.
Excellent.
We have a multitude of services that, you know, it's called shared services, but they have much more to offer us than we have for them.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
The roll call.
Ms. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yep.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Harris?
Yes.
Ms. Sheehan?
Yes.
Resolution 18-44, designating municipal court judge for the Borough of Rosamond.
That should have been done at reorg. I missed it. Judge Fonblick was reappointed for a 3-year term in Millstone, and since we are shared service court with mm-hmm. Millstone,
it was just an oversight.
Yeah,
it was an oversight at reorg. Do I have a motion?
I'll move that.
Second?
Second.
Discussion?
Yes. I don't know if there's any possibility in in not having Judge Sonnenblick, since the court Millstone was approved, but I would like to speak against designating that judge as our judge, because I believe that we could find another judge that would better serve our residents who appear in municipal court. For many people, the only contact that someone will have with the court system is with the municipal court. And I attended, prior to being on the council, at least 3 to 4 different municipal court proceedings, and I was supporting certain residents who were appearing. And this was in 2016 and 17. And it was in front of this judge, Sonnenblick. And I have concerns about the performance of the judge. I am an attorney, and maybe I may look at it differently. People may not see the point of view that I have, and in particular may not be familiar with the rules of professional conduct. But the rules of professional conduct for an attorney prohibit any attorney, including a judge, from presenting, to participate in, or threaten to present criminal charges to obtain an improper advantage in a civil matter. And I observed this judge, it was for several hours at a time, that 2 to 4 hours when we were sitting there waiting for the cases. And I observed this judge whenever a case was to be dismissed and one of our residents' cases that was dismissed after this resident had to appear 4 or 5 times. And when it was being dismissed, the judge attempted to ask that resident to stipulate to the existence of probable cause to bring the criminal complaint. And this resident did not agree, and then the resident had to go back again, because and then I was at the, wasn't at that particular one, but I was at the one when had to go back on it. And I do know, as a matter of law, that probable cause has absolutely nothing to do with guilt or innocence of a criminal case, municipal or superior court. And a judge should know this. Furthermore, coercing or intimidating, saying I'm not going to dismiss your case when the case lacks merit unless you stipulate that there was probable cause, that not just me but the Advisory Committee on Professional Ethics in 1992 had determined that that is a violation of ethical rules. It is coercing someone to give up a civil case in order to get a criminal case dismissed. And I also happen to know that, as I said, probable cause is totally irrelevant to guilt or innocence of a criminal case, but it is relevant to whether a person who was criminally prosecuted can bring and can prevail in a civil damage action for malicious prosecution in the bringing of a criminal case maliciously. One of the elements of that case is the person who sues would have to prove the lack of probable cause. You also have to prove that the criminal case was dismissed in your favor on the merits. There are other elements, but those are two primary ones. And not only did this judge condition the dismissal on stipulating to probable cause, but didn't know there was a 1992 ethics opinion on prohibiting that, and didn't tell the residents, and this happened on other cases that I observed, that really what you were doing is waiving your right to sue for malicious prosecution. Now, I happen to know that a waiver of rights has to be knowing and voluntary. So I had real major concerns, and this judge, ultimately it was dismissed without the stipulation of probable cause, and I believe that was because, whatever, I'm not going to get into it, but because there would have been a potential ethical complaint filed against the judge and the prosecutor. But I don't think our residents should be put to that. And I've been in other municipal courts where judges don't do that sort of thing. And this judge continued to do it after this ethics opinion was brought to the judge's attention, too. So for that reason, I would urge that we look for another municipal judge.
Well, this has come up, and we have discussed it. And basically, there's not a lot we can do now, but I've been advised that the best thing to do is possibly starting this summer. Because towns often change courts. If Roosevelt does not feel that Millstone Court is serving its residents properly or with enough respect, we can absolutely change, you know, a contract out to a different town, to a different courthouse. But it's too late for now, but what we could do is start working on it so by reorg, we'll have it in place that we've contracted to a different. So, again, that's something that probably should go to committee, where you can begin the research of mm-hmm. what other towns would be, you know, more beneficial to Roosevelt. So what committee would that be?
God knows. I don't know.
I just wanted to respond to what Councilwoman Parrott said. I was there during some of those court proceedings. And, yeah, it's a form of coercion. You know, you can plead innocent to this as long as you promise not to sue and you have a right to sue if you feel like you were unfairly prosecuted. And so that's like a form of coercion, and not only that, it's judges were told you can't do that anymore. This judge continued to do it.
Yeah, it's very hard.
So that's a little troubling. It was troubling to me, and it was troubling to see our citizens have to go there and agree to that. And so I share your experience and your opinion on this.
Do we do an ad hoc committee, do you think, or is it a specific?
I don't know, but I think we should start looking at
start
it,
looking
and seeing what's available in terms of other courts that we could work with.
What's the normal process for towns that utilize other judges? I mean,
maybe great. I don't know. It
depends on what the
long.
Shared services agreement says. Mm-hmm. So, for example, there are some shared services agreements where I don't believe you have a courtroom facility here.
No.
That's your issue, right? So you can go to another town and you can form a joint court, which means that you have a joint court with one judge that's appointed by the governor and professionals appointed, being the prosecutor and public defender, namely,
mm-hmm.
appointed by whichever town you agree, or however methodology you agree, if it's multiple towns on picking those people. And that's the most closely integrated kind of court. You could have a court where you share facilities and the professionals pursuant to the shared services agreement, but you haven't formed a quote-unquote joint court that puts all the money together. Because remember, the court is really a monetary entity, so it, the money is what matters. So you keep your money separate, but you agree to share other things beyond just like a facility. And then you could go down to, I know towns that they just rent the facility.
Mm-hmm.
One town provides the staff, and then both towns appoint their own judges and prosecutors. So you can do it any way you want under the agreement, subject to the approval of the assignment judge in the vicinage, or multiple vicinages if you're sharing a court across county borders. Vicinage meaning county, I should say.
There are costs involved. And we kind of break even
roughly, don't we, on the cost of...
I was going to say, we should probably do a study.
Well, we pay, well, we collect in fines, so...
How many Roosevelt, how many Rooseveltians actually, and, you know, are in Millstone Court. I mean, do we have 10 a year, 6, 20? You know, we have no idea, so that's something that needs to be looked at before we... so that when we go to other towns, we have the information, the data that we need.
Well, okay, what, do you, what is your arrangement here? Does anyone know under the shared services agreement?
It's not...
But you're clearly sharing a judge, right?
Yeah, sharing,
but are you sharing
a judge?
Plus, are you agreeing to appoint the same judge?
Agreeing to appoint the same judge, but...
Okay, so the agreement requires you to appoint the same judge separately.
And then they appoint
the
same
prosecutor and defender.
But I'm wondering if they could, you know, use the facility the other way that you discussed.
With our own?
You know, appointing your own judge,
but
appointing your own
prosecutor. I don't
know
if we have enough cases to warrant paying for something like that.
So, I mean, the attractiveness of any town.
The accounts, I believe, are separate. You know, there's a Roosevelt account and a Millstone account.
So, I mean, there's a number of interesting issues. So, for example, number one, that shared service agreement is probably for a time period shorter than 3 years. The judge's appointment here is 3 years long. So unless you're hanging back.
Well, we at REOR, I know every year we maybe we just reform, but every year we reappoint.
Yeah. We reappoint the judge every year.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And prosecutor and public defender.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. It's been in place.
It's
been in place so long.
Are you sure it's the judge every year?
Yeah, because this is a 3-year appointment.
No, all municipal judge appointments are 3 years. The prosecutor
so
or defender
no,
budget.
We don't appoint the judge every year. This is 3 years.
Appoint
the
prosecutor.
Then I'm saying you're not really appointing the judge. Then you're if you were doing it every year, I would say that the agreement says you have to ratify whatever Millstone chooses, because you wouldn't be doing that every year. So I mean, it really depends on what the shared services agreement says in terms of what you have to do. And obviously, you are at a disleveraged position because you're using someone else's court and all of their materials and everything. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, we definitely need.
Really
I mean, we need information. We need to know how many cases we send to Millstone, how many, or you know, how many Roosevelt cases they deal with, and then start.
Well, I'd be happy to volunteer, but again, Mr. Cannon, are you saying that this has to be 3 years? That
yes.
We couldn't do it for 1 year?
Yeah.
Well, then could we just table this? I guess
you can do that.
Wait, if we table it,
if you table it, the judge continues in the position until the successor is appointed.
Yeah, it's a carryover.
It's a carryover, holdover appointment.
I mean, I'd be happy to have to be on an ad hoc committee, and I mean, my first thing would be is I would go and observe the closest courts to us, and I'd speak with Mr. Cannon about.
Can I suggest another first step? Figuring out what the shared services agreement says so you know what your ability is. If it says we're going to appoint the same people as Millstone and you already approved that at the first meeting, then there's nothing you can do. It's basically ceremonial.
Okay.
Or you could, that's the first step. I don't know, before we figure out what any of their options
are. Well, yes, thank you. I appreciate that. I would be happy to be on an ad hoc committee.
But do you think we should table Judge Sonnenblick's appointment tonight, or
that's
since
that's
a done
your guys,
deal?
That's your guys' call. I mean, that's up to you guys.
Well,
I'm just telling you what would happen.
What would be
if you don't approve it, or you table it, or it doesn't go through, it would be a holdover appointment, and the judge would continue to serve until the successor is appointed, mm-hmm. And approved by the vicinage. Obviously, they go through the credentials. I mean, minimum requirements, you have to be a lawyer for 5 years, so the vicinage checks those requirements, that's what it would be. If you appointed it, then it's a 3-year appointment. And there's very, very little that you could do to remove a judge.
So if it's a 3-year appointment, then but we still have the option of next year contracting to a different court. In other words, leaving Millstone and going to upper freehold.
The answer is I don't know, because I don't know what the term of your shared services agreement is. If it's annual.
Mm-hmm.
So we're getting I had discussed the confidentiality aspect with Ms. Parrott. So because this is the legislative body's appointment of a judicial official, pretty much it's you've seen in Congress and Senate, it's open season, right? But now that we're getting into contractual issues with another municipality, I prefer that if we continue this discussion in executive session, because I'm going to give you advice about what this says and the things that you could do, and that's not really appropriate for the public record.
Okay.
That's okay with you.
I'd like to suggest that we table.
Table the whole resolution?
To see how we want to proceed with it.
Well, that would give me a lot more time to read.
Yeah, right.
Well, I'll second that motion.
So, Mike, you are tabling?
Yeah.
And Maureen seconded.
For tabling, right?
There's no discussion on a table.
All
in favor of tabling?
Yes.
Should we do a roll call on the table?
No.
You can do all in favor?
You can just say all in favor. You're not really technically taking any action.
Okay.
Okay.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Yes.
Aye. 18-44 is tabled. And the last resolution... For tonight, 18-45, setting fees for a recreational summer camp.
I'll move 18-45.
Okay. I'm sorry. Did you move
it? Yes, I'll move 18-45.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion?
Ms. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Ms. Parrott?
Yes.
Ian?
Yes.
We come to reports of committee chairs. Again, I ask that people just summarize their report. Mike, I'll start with A, so you're first.
All right, alphabetical.
Administration.
By committee. Administration met several times to discuss personnel issues. And because there were personnel issues, I'm not going to report on the substance of that. But, you know, if it's all right to report on it later, I'd be glad to. End of report.
Robin, community development, code enforcement?
We had one meeting in January, and I think I reported on that earlier. We are waiting for Mr. Cannon to have time to catch his breath and meet with us about the land swap. Well, first the liquor license, the land swap, and the other matters, but we're hoping to...
Those are both, for your customer, those are both CDC, Community Development Committee?
Yes.
Okay. That issue and the other issue we talked about earlier, the land swap?
The liquor license had, we were hoping, you know, because it's... you have all the material, I'll send it to you, to move that forward and next the land swap after that, and then just a general discussion about where we are with the redevelopment of the gas station. But it's those first two things, so I hope to meet soon.
I was going
to
suggest that after we get done with the administration committee's project, that we could schedule a meeting with the CDC.
Perfect.
And me, and we can do that, and then we can start on that one next. If that's
sounds
okay.
Great. Yeah,
both those things next.
Thank you.
Thank you. Environmental health and safety?
I just want to announce that the borough is going to be sponsoring a community blood drive on Tuesday, March 27th from 1:30 to 7:30 p.m. Flyers will be going out with the borough bulletin, the March borough bulletin, so more information about how to sign up, who's eligible to donate, that kind of thing will be in the flyer. There's also, I believe, a little notice that is on our webpage. One thing they would love, if you do plan on coming, is for people to make appointments. That helps them figure out how much staff and supplies they're going to need. The organization we're doing this with is called New Jersey Blood Services. They're part of an organization called the New York Blood Center. And that's a large regional blood bank that supplies bloods to hospitals in New York, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania. So I hope to see everyone here at this blood drive on the 27th, and encourage your neighbors and other family members to come. I think it's an important and vital service that we're doing.
Thank you. Johnson, and I really want to thank you for getting on that here, because, you know, for Roosevelt had yearly blood drives for many, many, many
I remember.
Years, and
yeah.
then somehow it was discontinued, and we haven't had one in a long time. So this is really a good service
good.
To the community. Where am I? Finance. Well, I don't really believe that we have a finance report, since we probably haven't had a finance committee meeting, so we can just skip that for tonight. Public Works, Cody?
It's the second time the police tried to attack me. Oh, sorry. There. I only have enough for mayor and council members, so sorry, I know I got messed up. So there's a hazardous tree that was brought to my attention near the memorial. I got the quote from Allen's Tree Service, and it's kind of confusing. I'm looking at the zoning map, and I'm in contact with Roosevelt Public School, and it's kind of hard to tell whether it's on borough property or school property between both of us, but we're in direct communication, and Allen Tree Service services both school and borough, so either way, we're moving through with it. We're going to get it cut down. Tree branches are falling in the walkways, and we're going to look into it and find out who's going to be able to pay for it afterwards. Employee meetings will be held twice a month. The two pump sheds at the sewage treatment plant have been insulated. And there's also spring hinges on the doors so that when you leave, it automatically closes. That prevents any drafts or anything like that. So that will prevent future issues, extreme cold temperatures. Garbage cans can now be replaced repaired by Public Works. There's going to be a pamphlet, if there isn't already. Anna's going to print out a pamphlet, put it on the post office. It's Public Works. At RooseveltNJ.us, which I believe is Dave, and it's gonna we'll be able to check it out, and it's parts that we're gonna replace on the garbage cans. The area of the water main break on Pine Drive has been cleaned of asphalt debris. There's some asphalt that was in the lawn. Broken puncheon remains at the entranceway to Rochdale to North Valley has been removed. We held a public works meeting a week ago, and basically what we covered is we're going to do employee meetings twice a month for half an hour. A council member or a chair will sit in on these meetings to ease communications between employees and the borough. Task lists will be assigned for each employee to clarify and reduce redundancies at these meetings. New projects can be introduced, discussed, and assigned, and that's just to open up communication between borough members, council members, and employees. Public Works will work with Utility Committee and Health and Safety Committee on safety hazard awareness, prevention, and maintenance for borough facilities to prevent potential incidences. And this is a side thing, but we're looking at potential for Public Works employees to mow and maintain borough property to cut costs. Equipment will be inspected, and labor hours will be calculated to see if this is a viable option between me and Anna. And that's all I got for Public Works.
I have a question about the employee meetings. Is that all employees or only Public Works?
It's mainly for employees, but the intention...
Public Works employees,
yes. And Public Works board member or chairperson can sit in on these meetings, and that's kind of the intention, so we can sit in and kind of... Because we're kind of for the budgets and everything like that. Be able to assign tasks and to kind of reduce redundancy so everyone knows what's going on. So that's kind of the purpose. It's only a half hour every two weeks or so. So the point is just kind of get in, know what everyone's doing, and get out kind of thing.
So it's only Public Works?
It's only Public Works, correct, yeah.
Okay, reports of borough officials. I don't believe we have any tonight. Does anyone have any old business at the table they'd like to bring up? Being none, we will go to new business. First is the use of the Barrel Hall. Carol Walker requested use of the Barrel Hall on March 4th, which is a Sunday, from 9:30 to 2.
What's the event, do you know?
I don't know. I believe it's some kind of something political, you know, having to do with the 2018 elections, but can't say that for certain. do we want to table this until we ask her, or just give her permission?
I'll just, Mr. Penn, is there any reason that the borough should know before it authorizes use of Borough Hall for any, or could it, I mean, what if it was a KKK? I'm not saying it is, but
KKK is allowed to meet here if you open it up to everybody else.
Right, but the I mean, only we
thing
always
that,
ask.
The only thing that I will caution you on is you mentioned political activity, so no one is allowed to solicit or otherwise make or receive any political contributions on public property under New Jersey law. So that's the only restriction on, you know. And of course, the warning always goes, you open up to one, you open up to all, no matter who they like. Who
but
they
historically,
are, like,
we have always asked people what the use is for.
We have had occasions where we've rejected an application because the organization was listed on the state website as being an organization that was not a valid nonprofit.
You can determine party responsibility, insurance, coverage, all like that. What people talk about here, that you can not
control.
Unless it's listed political contributions, in which case it's banned.
Yeah, and just as somebody said, just add us something on the page saying purpose of use of. That's all.
So we can table it for tonight.
I'm going to have to change the form because it doesn't say.
What if somebody wanted to sell their product and
do their
home-based business and use the Borough Hall as a facility to do that on a weekly basis and sell their products, is there any prohibition against doing that, or we would do?
I mean, you can limit the type, frequency, and duration of use.
Mm-hmm.
So we wanted to have, like, a financial advisor wanted to have a seminar, which is typically like sales lead kind of.
Yes. Right.
I mean, it's a public meeting room. You know, they often hold at libraries or senior centers.
Yeah.
So that stuff's all good. I mean, you can't really just restrict on content, but time, use, duration, purpose. Like, you don't really want, like, you know, a dog. Like rescue in here, set up with dogs. If you
yes
come in
do
and check out. Maybe you do. I don't know. Horses.
We all start itching in there.
You know,
what's this
content. It's the same as you know all the other First Amendment issues.
Okay.
Content's the issue.
Yeah. Okay.
So if we can just call her and then we can always approve it at the 26th because it's still a week before the 4th.
Can I just say that for myself, long time neighbor, and I think we're going overboard here. It's not on the form. I would just
vote
to let her have the room.
Yeah, I wasn't. I was just asking.
It's just
I
traditionally
wasn't
people do
stipulating on
stipulate
that, you know.
The reason they want to rent the Borough Hall.
Just add it to the form, and then they will.
Yeah.
It's not on here.
Yeah. But I agree. I think we should just consider it and now not pull it.
Oh, my goodness, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't want to pull it.
So
I'm just curious.
She's
fine.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I first need a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Oh.
All right, I'll second it if you want to go first.
Mm-hmm. Well, Robin, I'm putting Robin first.
Yeah, that's fine.
Right. Second, and then all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Yes.
Okay.
All right, the second order of new business is use of the Borough Hall by Karen Ward on March 25th, which I think might be a Sunday also, from 11 to 5. Yeah, I guess it was always on there before.
But
I understand it's a party. No, I do understand. I think it's a party.
I move to approve this, and then the other part is to add that line on the form. That's all.
A second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Okay. And the third item is use of the Borough Hall for the blood drive, March 27th, 2018, from 11. Deirdre, you said 1:30. This is not that it matters.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, 11:30 because it takes them a couple of hours to set up.
Right. Okay. So whatever. 11:30 to 9.
That's
but they're accepting blood starting at 1:30.
Right.
But they're setting up at 11:30.
So just off the record, there's no form. We just say yay, and that's okay, right? Okay.
Yep.
Yeah. I don't.
I mean, it's fine with me. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Do we have a first?
I move to allow the blood drive use of Borough Hall March 27th.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Yes.
Aye.
All right. Before we go to public, I have actually something for new business. Wrote out here. So.
This is item 4.
Yes, item 4. Okay. I believe that everyone here knows that we live in a gem of a town. You know, we have problems. Every town has problems. But we all know that Roosevelt is really special. And we have national and state historic designation for the town as a whole in its entirety, which is very rare. Now, does everyone, well, some people won't, but many people here may remember that we were on the cover of New Jersey Monthly Magazine in, I believe it was March of, or April of 2006, because we were voted the best town to live in New Jersey. And, I didn't know that?
Yeah.
And lots of people in Chatham and Morristown and people that are in the wealthier towns that are usually voted number one were, you know, there was a lot of chagrin to our being selected, but we were very proud of it, and it was, you know, it was really a special thing to be on this, in this magazine, as the best town to live in. And a lot of things have changed since 2006, which was almost 12 years ago. But I think it's extremely important to maintain our town for generations to come. We are the temporary tenders of Roosevelt for the future. So to that extent, I would like to address what I feel is a current problem affecting the town. Recently, many new people have moved to town and removed many, if not all, of the trees on their property. It's being done almost weekly. You just drive through town, and there's huge trucks here, and the new residents are taking out most of their trees, if not all. As stated by the New Jersey Magazine article, we are an agrarian town. Our roots are based in agriculture and farming. I'm actually going to read the official definition of agrarian, relating to cultivated land, and the synonyms are agricultural, rural, rustic, pastoral, countryside, and farming. We are nestled here in the woods, and I believe that we have an obligation to retain and maintain the trees. We are a tender of the trees as well as the town, because they will be here long after we will. Personally, I don't understand why someone would move to the country and then remove the trees, barring, of course, dead trees or potentially hazardous ones. But that's not the case in what's being done recently. Healthy, beautiful trees are being ripped out. So I would like to ask the Environmental Committee, Environmental Health and Safety, to study the tree ordinances from other towns, bring it back to the council, and have the council discuss putting a tree ordinance in place so that residents just can't randomly pull out all the trees on their property. As I said before, in case they're, unless they're dead or presenting some kind of hazard. So okay. Would you be willing to have your committee look into that?
Sure. Yeah, Princeton comes to mind because I think they've had similar concerns.
Right.
Okay.
If I could point you to Lead, Rumson has one of the most restrictive tree ordinances in the state. And the borough of Nottowan has one that's less restrictive.
Okay.
Those are two good places to start if you're looking for comprehensive, like the extent of what you can do.
Okay.
I would prefer as rigid as possible because that's what we are here. We are a little community in the woods. And this week alone, on my street, one house on one side of me and one house a few doors down had every tree removed.
Yeah.
Pretty hard on us, I think. There's a lot of dissension in town, and people have a lot of conflicting opinions about things, but I think that's one thing that most people are on the same page about. No one wants to see all the trees taken out. So, thank you.
Okay.
Does everyone remember that, Mike? Have people seen that magazine article? Do they know it existed?
Yeah.
Oh, is it?
People, yeah.
I have four copies. I bought a bunch when it came out. I jumped the gun a little. I completely forgot. I have a committee report. It's very short from Joe Trammell. So I'm sorry. I'm going to go out of order, and I'll just read his report. On January 29th, Kathleen, our borough clerk, got a call from a citizen that the manhole on the trail near the sewer plant was overflowing. Joe called Toby and advised that he would call Route 24 and they would be there in the morning to clear the clog. This has happened in the past, and it's a result of grease buildup in the sewer lines. So again, no wipes or grease in your drains because it causes major maintenance issues. On February 8th, the new grinder was installed at the sewer plant, and it seems to be working fine. Also on February 8th, the rebuilt sludge pump was installed in the pump house at the sewer plant. Our Public Works Department added insulation to the pump house to help it from freezing again, which I think is what Cody touched upon. And on February 9th, Larry Sear from the DEP inspected the hatch analyzer at the water plant, and we're expecting a report from him. And finally, on February 12th, Modern Power repaired the emergency generator at the sewer plant. So that was Joe's report. So. Next on the agenda, oh, next is public?
For new business, are we adding a resolution to appoint me to committees?
So it does have to be done by resolution?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the clerk and I just we just modified the original one.
Right.
Filled in Maureen's name. You had said you were cool with the open spots.
Yes, I'm happy with the three open spots that were not that were from the reorg meeting, left from the reorg meeting.
Yeah, well, she said what she just said right now, that she would take those spots.
Right, so what we're going to do is introduce a resolution placing Maureen on on the three committees that had open spots. So she'll be finance chair and a member of utilities and environmental health and safety. Okay, because she missed the last at reorg meeting when this was decided upon. So.
And I can do a roll call vote if you want.
Okay.
Okay. I'll move that resolution.
Perfect.
Okay. Second.
Second.
Roll call.
Ms. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Hamilton?
Yes.
Mr. Parker?
Yes.
Ms. Farrett?
Yes.
Ms. Sheehan?
Yes.
Good.
So I will do a resolution adding your names to these.
Okay. We are going to go out of order a bit on the agenda. Instead of public comment, the next item was supposed to be a closed session. However, the subject of the closed session. You want to do it?
Yeah.
I can do it, but you can probably do it more legally than I can.
Okay, so at the last meeting, the mayor had assigned the administration committee to conduct an investigation of the borough's water and sewer utilities compliance with regulations and mandates that arose as a result of the sodium hydroxide over-injected into the summertime. The committee had performed that work and prepared a preliminary report on the. I assisted them, but I have to say that this is like the greatest town ever. I don't know. I showed up to this meeting, and these guys had everything in binders, tabulated, knew where everything was. It was absolutely awesome. You guys did yeoman's work, and it was really great. I've never actually had experience like that before. I couldn't believe it to when I came in. So thank you very much, Councilwoman Philippe and Councilman Trammell and Councilman Hamilton. So the preliminary report of the investigation, given the compliance with the DEP regulations as to the utilities, is largely within the purview of the licensed operator who is an employee of the borough. The investigation naturally touched upon that employee's job performance, and therefore he was served with an appropriate race notice in advance of this meeting. We had intended to discuss this matter in closed session, but under New Jersey law, it is the employee's option as to whether the matter take place in closed session or public session. And the employee determined that he would prefer that the discussion or the presentation of the report occur in open session. So we actually won't have a closed session. And I think the mayor just moved the agenda because the public wouldn't have heard this, but now will, and may want to comment on it during the public comment section, in keeping with the spirit of Mr. Clark's earlier email. So, the administration committee's investigation follows up on the facts discovered, conclusions reached, and remedial actions recommended by the utility committee's July 2017 investigation.
into a major incident arising from the over-injection of sodium hydroxide into the residents' drinking water at the borough's water treatment plant. Given the incredibly dangerous situation created by that operational error, the New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection, DEP, which I'll refer to them going forward, which possesses obviously overarching regulatory jurisdiction over municipal water treatment and wastewater treatment, has been intimately involved in monitoring the borough's operations since the summer of 2017. The DEP also conducted its own investigation into the sodium hydroxide incident and a review of the borough's water and sewer utilities. By letter dated October 19, 2017, the DEP issued a notice of deficiency to the borough to address to the operator, identifying significant deficiencies throughout the operations of the borough's water treatment plant. And the DEP letter and notice of deficiency is attached to the preliminary report that was presented to each of you. You all have a copy. That's attached as Exhibit A. Therein, the DEP mandated numerous remedial actions be taken by the operator to bring the borough's water treatment plant back into compliance within 90 days. DEP further indicated that certain required water and effluent testing reports had not been filed in some instances for more than 2 years. Purpose of the Administration Committee's investigation, which is still ongoing at this point, this is a preliminary report, is to determine whether the borough's water and sewer utilities are in compliance with DEP's regulations, and so far as the failure to comply could result in potentially hundreds of thousands of dollars in fines under the New Jersey Safe Drinking Water Act, New Jersey Water Supply Management Act, and the New Jersey Water Pollution Control Act. Committee conducted the following investigation activities since our last meeting. We reviewed relevant DEP correspondence from June 2017 to the present, reviewed operator reports, correspondence, and emails from June 2017 to the present. We reviewed relevant EPA correspondence and emails from June 2017 to the present. We reviewed notes and memos and reports from the Utility Committee's July 2017 investigation. We reviewed the 2017 annual water quality report, which noted the incident. We reviewed relevant borough correspondence and emails from June 2017 to the present. We reviewed the daily log sheets for the water treatment plant from January 2016 to the present. We reviewed the Borough of Roosevelt Employee Handbook to ensure that we were protecting the employees' rights as our spouse to all of our employees through the handbook. I conducted a telephone interview with former Mayor Jeff Ellentuck. I also conducted a telephone interview with Borough Engineer Carmela Roberts. The committee consulted with an independent licensed operator, John Holden of H2O Services, because some of these things were outside our area of expertise, obviously. The committee held several committee and subcommittee meetings to review the documents and the background. That is the status of the activities conducted to date by the administration committee. In terms of what was discovered at this preliminary juncture, on September 12, 2017, following the sodium hydroxide incident, the DEP conducted an inspection of the borough's water treatment plant, as well as interviews with the operator and various borough officials. The DEP's site visit notes and compliance evaluation report are attached to the report that you guys got as Exhibit B. The most important item discussed during that site visit was the installation of an inline pH meter and continuous chlorine monitoring device. The installation of this equipment and the alarm at the water and connecting it, more importantly, to an alarm at the water treatment plant would prevent another incident like the one that occurred in June and July of 2017. According to the DEP's first page of the DEP's September site visit notes, the operator confirmed that the borough had received the auto recorder of the inline pH meter and continuous chlorine device, and quote, it will be installed once funding is in place to hire a contractor. That's on page one of Exhibit B attached to your report. By letter dated October 19th, the DEP served the aforementioned notice of deficiency that I mentioned earlier, and that had very specific requirements. It required an explanation of the corrective measures taken that will be taken within 15 calendar days, a written report concerning the specific details of remedial measures to be instituted for these items, as well as an information timetable within 30 days, and it required that all corrective measures must be scheduled for completion within 90 calendar days. The notice of deficiency identified 11 specific deficiencies that violate New Jersey DEP regulations. Without going into all of them, in essence, sludge was not removed from portions of the plant for over 3 years. There was numerous typographical errors in monthly reports. The total coliform sampling plan was incomplete. There's sampling missing from 2016. 2017 Consumer Confidence Report was late, and water allocation quarterly reports are consistently late, among other things. Those are the highlights. It did not appear to the committee from any of the documentary evidence reviewed, which I just listed, which is very extensive, that any action has thus far been or was taken to provide the explanation, quote-unquote, to the DEP within 15 calendar days pursuant to the notice. That would have been on November 11, 2017. By email to the operator dated November 8, 2017, the DEP requested a date for a meeting, to which the operator responded that he was not available until November 29. On November 20th, the operator obtained a quote from Pumping Services to expand the existing inputs on the water treatment plant's monitoring system to indeed connect it to the alarm. I'll note that this is 2 months after the site visit in September. And that order would mean that as of November 20th, 2017, the mandated equipment that was mandated by the DEP during their emergent site visit was not installed, or it was installed, but it was not operational and it was not alarmed as of November 20th, 2017. By email to the operator dated November 21st, 2017, the DEP presented six questions, some of which weren't terribly material to the subject of this report. One was, most importantly, confirm the status of the pH and chlorine inline monitor. You previously indicated the unit had been purchased and shipped by August 22nd, 2017. And you stated the water system would need to coordinate, and this is the DEP writing to the operator, I should mention, with HOC technicians and others to get the unit installed and startup procedures, anticipated completion and startup by September 22nd, 2017. That's Exhibit E to your, it's essentially DEP following up, because the alarm that prevents the incident that happened in the summer from happening again is not installed, they're being told. So, by email to the operator on the morning of November 27th, this would be 30 days subsequent to the 30-day deadline in the notice of violation, the DEP followed up again and required a submittal of a written report concerning the specific details of remedial measures to be instituted, implementation timetable for the deficiencies and violations noted. This follow-up email is attached as Exhibit F to your the governing body's report. The DEP also requested that we please provide the status of these two reports, which are overdue because we had now passed the deadline, and noted the publication date for other sampling back from October of 2016 was not appropriately submitted. In response to the email dated November 27, 2017, the borough's operator forwarded a document entitled Roosevelt Drinking Water Response Report to the DEP. Therein, the operator represented the following to the DEP with respect to the inline monitors. The unit has been installed and working. It is reading chlorine, pH, and temperature. We still have to have the unit hooked up to the water plant pump watch alarm system. The purchase order for this work was mailed to the vendor today. That was the previous exhibit that was from 2 days earlier. This will take 2 to 3 weeks to get the parts in to complete this job. Then it would take another couple of weeks to get the HAC technician out to calibrate the unit. After receiving the operator's above-referenced report by email to the operator on the evening of November 27, 2017, that means that night, the DEP wrote back, last month I sent you a NGDPES violations report for Roosevelt's water treatment plant. The report showed 140 open reporting violations going back to August 2015. To date, you have only addressed 9 of the violations. You are required to immediately submit the missing reports. That email speaks for itself, and it is attached as Exhibit H to your report. During the committee's investigation, it did not appear to the committee that the operator has successfully remedied all of the other 131 violations referenced by this email. And to date, the committee has not yet obtained any evidence of compliance by the borough of DEP's regulations. By email exchange between the operator and DEP dated December 1st, the DEP indicated that it still not received the daily log sheets from September 2016 through June 2017. These are the daily sheets where testing results are reported. And the operator responded that he was having difficulty converting iPad pictures into a usable format to send by email to the DEP. By emails dated December 4th and 5th, the operator appears to have sent some of the missing monthly reports, but is unclear, I'm sorry, daily logs, but is unclear if all reports are up to date at this time to the committee. We have not, they did not receive, and I'm insisting they did not receive any information in that regard. Further, it's not clear as to whether the operator has responded to DEP regarding the borough's lead and copper sampling plan, which was item 6 on the prior email from the beginning of November. By email dated December 18th, a concerned citizen, Robert Craig, contacted DEP inquiring about the borough's compliance with the DEP's mandates. Mr. Craig's email is attached as Exhibit K to your report. By email December 22nd, the DEP responded to Mr. Craig that it was in the process of gathering more information regarding the monitoring system, whether the monitoring system is linked to the alarm system, but rest assured there's understanding the pH, temperature, and chlorine levels are being monitored by the new units at this time. Given the foregoing, it was very clear to the committee that the DEP expected the mandated inline systems to be already fully operational with functioning alarms at the time they responded to Mr. Cragen, given the substance of their response. In response, Mr. Cragen contacted Councilman Joe Trammell, who in turn inquired of the operator as to the status of the inline monitoring system and learned that it had not yet been calibrated by the hack technicians. Mr. Cragen then relayed this information to DEP via email dated December 28, 2017, and the DEP immediately contacted the borough the next business day, which happened to be January 2nd, 2018, regarding the information received. That cycled down the borough's administration, and by email dated January 9th, 2018, the operator represented to the DEP, the pH chlorine monitor has been operational, reading pH chlorine and temperature for the last 2 months. Pumping services have received the parts to upgrade our current water plant alarm system to accommodate pH chlorine monitor's alarm. We are scheduled to do the upgrading connection to the pH chlorine alarm on Wednesday, January 17th, 2018. After this process is completed, I will then schedule the HAC technician to come out and calibrate the pH chlorine monitor. I will point out to the governing body that if you look at Exhibit B, which is the site visit notes on the very first page, this is the same process that has been talked about at this point for 4 months. On January 29th, 2018, the operator had the borough's purchasing agent email the DEP a document entitled Borough of Roosevelt Completion of the pH Chlorine Monitoring System, which stated the pH chlorine monitoring system has been successfully installed, calibrated, and certified. Successful alarm alerts on pH and chlorine were successfully sent to the water plant operator's cell phone and emails. That document indicates that the installation of the monitoring system was not completed until January 23rd, 2018. By email dated February 13th, 2018, 2 days ago, it also came to the committee's attention that in addition to the borough's non-compliance, apparent non-compliance of DEP regulations, the borough did not file an annual water audit for the Delaware River Basin Commission for 2017. The committee was alerted to this fact through an email from the operator, which indicated that, quote, I have no idea how to complete this audit, period. It is something that must be completed by the borough engineer, end quote. That email is attached as Exhibit N to the report that the borough governing body has here. Further investigation by the committee revealed the existence of a letter dated August 17, 2017 from the commission addressed to the operator via certified mail and signed for by S. Canizzaro on behalf of the borough, the tax collector. The commission's letter states in relevant parts as follows. This notice is to inform you that your calendar year 2016 water audit was due by March 31, 2017. This mandatory audit is now overdue. Since the inception of DRBC's water and audit program, members of my staff have reached out by email to your organization multiple times regarding this annual requirement. The commission has circulated email reminders each year prior to the audit report being due on March 23rd and has notified purveyors typically in May or June when they did not submit timely reports. Our records indicate that your organization has not submitted the following water audits: calendar year 2012, calendar year 2013, calendar year 2014, calendar year 2015, and calendar year 2016. The commission views failures to comply with the DRBC requirements as a serious matter. Section 14.17 of the Compact, which is the Delaware River Basin Compact, provides for the imposition of penalties up to $1,000 for each day of a continuing violation of the Compact or any rule. Through other email correspondence, the committee understands the operator did not receive the Commission's August 17, 2017 correspondence, citing the mid-2017 resignations of numerous borough officials as preventing the correspondence from reaching the operator. It is unclear at this time to the committee as to how the operator missed correspondence or emails from the commission for the last 5 years regarding unfiled reports. With respect to the overall operation of the borough's water and sewer utility, the committee notes that the mayor and council have recently been required to approve more than $25,000 in expenditures for emergency repairs to the borough's utilities within the last 60 days. From consultations with the borough engineer and other licensed operator, these emergency expenditures can ordinarily be avoided with proper maintenance and attention to the utility systems.
leads us to the administration committee's preliminary findings. At this preliminary stage of its investigation, the committee expresses grave concern as to the fact that more than 6 months following the sodium hydroxide incident, more than 4 months after representing the DEP that inline monitors would be installed in September 2017, and more than 90 days after receipt of the DEP's October 19, 2017 notice of deficiency, the DEP mandated deadline for the action to be taken, the operator failed to install, calibrate, and connect the inline pH meter and chlorine monitor until January 23, 2018. The committee finds this expansive timeline to be frankly unbelievable given the grave danger posed to borough residents during the sodium hydroxide incident and the fact that the inline monitor alarms were mandated by the DEP to prevent another incident from occurring. The committee finds extremely troubling the operator's non-urgent and borderline misleading interactions with the DEP regarding the status of the installation, calibration, and connection of the inline systems from September 27th to January 2017. Indeed, the DEP's response to the borough's concerned citizen, Mr. Craigett, makes it relatively clear that the DEP was either mistaken in its understanding of the facts on the ground or being misled about them. The committee is gravely concerned regarding the compliance of the borough's water and sewer utilities with the New Jersey Safe Water Drinking Act, the Water Supply Management Act, the Water Pollution Control Act, and the Delaware River Basin Compact, as well as DEP rules and regulations. The penalties and fines associated with these violations, the foregoing laws and attendant regulations range into the hundreds of thousands of dollars per day of continuing violation. It would appear from the committee's review of the notices, emails, and correspondence from the DEP to the operator, there are presently numerous reporting requirements, filing deadlines, and other mandates that have been missed by the operator on behalf of the borough dating back to at least 2015. Further, the borough engineer informed the committee that she does not believe the water and sewer utilities have been brought back into full compliance by the operator at this time, which is now bordering on 6 months after the DEP's initial visit. Going forward, with the assistance of the borough attorney, the administration committee will conduct the following investigation activities. Contact the DEP's compliance and enforcement bureau to determine the current status of the borough water and sewer utilities compliance with applicable regulations. Interview Toby Moore, the borough water and sewer utilities operator, regarding the preliminary facts discovered and preliminary findings contained in this report. And to consult with the borough engineer regarding compliance requirements and implementation of an action plan for any non-compliant items that are indeed discovered. The committee will complete the foregoing investigation activities and present the final report and recommendations for action to the governing body at the February 26, 2018 council meeting. And again, I want to thank the committee for its incredible work in making my life very easy in terms of just walking in and having everything prepared. So that's where we stand. On that, I don't know if Robin or Michael would like to add anything at this point. But that's the plan.
Not at this point, no.
Okay.
Did anybody else?
Sure.
I commend the committee and Mr. Cannon for this outstanding the thorough work that's obvious from this document. I also, and I don't know if this is the appropriate time or not, but I also personally had concerns about whether or not the operator reported to the DEP accurately the two incidents in June and July. My understanding, I could be mistaken, was that the only report that I had seen was a report that the pH was over 10 on one street in Roosevelt, and that was in the end of June. I don't know whether there were other reports or not, but that was not accurate from my understanding of reading various emails that were sent to the federal EPA and the DEP by the operator subsequently, that the pH was actually 11.99 in the first incident, which is, from my understanding, is a dangerously high pH, and that it affected the entire town. So that's just an additional point that I have a question in my mind of whether or not that was reported properly. And then I do not believe that residents were adequately informed of either of these incidents. And
I did my own research on Federal Environmental Protection Agency, which has a pamphlet that I got online that says that residents are to be informed of the nature of the danger of a water incident within 24 hours. And I'll tell you, I live here, and I never got any notice of the first incident of 11.99. And so that, to me, is a major concern, which goes to health and safety of residents, because I found out about the first incident because one of my neighbors called me and said she'd gotten a code red that said don't use the water. But that doesn't mean that the water's dangerous.
Yeah, well, let me put it this way. This is a preliminary report. The investigation is ongoing. The committee's aware of other things that weren't contained in this report. Of course, two of the things you mentioned, 24-hour notice, would also be dependent upon when someone figured out what was happening. And two, the scope of the report would also go to the person's perception. So we're going to interview the operator, and I think that those issues and others will also be addressed. But those aren't necessarily facts and evidence, I guess, is the point at this juncture. Now, this is, you know, everything that the committee has found to date that it can say with certainty. Those things were aware of those issues.
Okay.
I think that the committee intends to follow up on those.
Okay.
And this is going to get thicker.
Okay. That was the only point I wanted to raise, and that to me, I guess my own concern is that I do think that it is urgent that residents be informed when there is a dangerous condition. And that was the only thing I wanted. I wasn't trying to make any negative point to about the committee, which has done a monumental job.
No, I didn't take it that way. I just want to give you my ease that we're still going.
And actually, I sat at that meeting on September 12th for 7 hours, and the DEP did corroborate that our method of communicating to the residents was woefully inadequate.
I didn't want to comment on one thing that Councilwoman Parra mentioned. There's a huge difference between if you report the pH is over 10 and on one street, because it's a logarithmic scale. So 11.99 is almost 12. That's 100 times more than the reported level. The actual level was 100 times more than what was reported. That's a huge difference. And also that only one part of town was affected.
No, one street.
One street. I mean, that's also, you know, seems to have minimized the extent of the problem. So
I'd just like to add that I looked up what pH of 12 is, and that is, this is stated on an official site, that is the pH at which point animal carcasses will disintegrate. Otherwise known as ammonia. There's a lot more to be, you know, there's more.
And I really want to commend the committee for this spectacular work in such a short amount of time.
Well, this is something that was long overdue. I mean, this.
Well, you know, it's as well as the 90-day deadline expired 2 weeks ago for the remedial actions. So the borough needs to decide what to do with all the facts in front of it. At the February 26th council meeting in making this work.
So there's been an awareness for quite a long time that the water sewer problems had to be addressed. And so finally now it's coming to fruition. Any other discussion at the table about this? Okay, so now we come to public comment on any item. Anyone would like to come and speak?
Good evening, everyone. Stacy Bona, 17 Homestead Lane. As a former member of the Utilities Committee during these summer incidents, I would encourage all council members to go back, listen to the meeting minutes, the recordings of the tapes of the meetings following those incidents. Also, the Utilities Committee did submit a report. We did interviews. I would encourage
you
to also.
Just, you know.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Thank you, Rob.
Yeah, it was part of the list of stuff that I was droning on about earlier. We read all of it. You guys did a lot of work back then, too.
We did.
Yeah.
Thank you. As a member of the Environmental Commission, why weren't Sharon and Beth reappointed? They were interested in their positions. Cody and Heidi, I think, are going to make really fine additions to our commission. I'm just kind of curious why they weren't considered.
Their terms had expired, and it's the mayor's discretion to choose whomever the mayor wants to be on the commission.
Oh.
And that's what I did.
Okay, so I'm done.
It's very
as
common
of 2007, the end of this year, because my term expires this year. So.
It's very common for new administrations to replace people on different committees and commissions.
Okay. So. I just seem to recall a council meeting during the emergency services buildings debates, several council meetings, where you had specifically mentioned that volunteerism is dying, and it will die if you kill it.
Well, I certainly found other people to take their seat at the Environmental Commission.
And we will travel on. And like I say, I think Cody and Heidi are both fine people and members, and I'm sure Sharon and Beth will still be very involved. I was just curious about your reasons. Thank you very much for your time.
Anyone else? Mike?
Okay, I just want to point out you're looking at for tree ordinances, that the League of Municipalities maintains a library of
okay.
all sorts of ordinances. So if you call them and ask them to send you all the sample tree ordinances they have,
Thank you.
Would do that. That'll give you a lot of them that you can look at. And
great.
And
you can
share them with the Environmental Commission as well.
All right.
Okay, because that's certainly something if we can do it. Usually the ordinances are directed towards development issues where, you know, the trees can't be removed as part of developments, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, in existing lots, you know, that most of those sort of ordinances don't apply, but it would be interesting to see if towns do have ordinances applying to the existing lots and if they've been able to enforce them.
Rumson does.
I'm sorry?
Rumson
does.
Rumson
does, yeah,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's what I'm
yeah,
okay, yeah.
Cut down a tree over 4 inches on your property, you either have to replace it or make a contribution.
Right, okay, good.
Mm-hmm. Substantial contribution.
Mm-hmm. Another thing was that the tree that we're not sure if it's on the school property or rather than go to the expense of getting a survey to find out whose property it's on, it would make more sense perhaps to, you know, for the two municipal bodies to split simply split it or something.
It's at the line. It's like kind of like right there.
Yeah, I know.
So
you know, perhaps you can suggest to them that.
Well,
yeah. they can't agree to that.
Yeah, I was just
going to
say,
split it.
Whether it's in the school budget or the
municipal
budget,
anyway.
Everybody pays for
it.
It doesn't matter.
The question of whose property
it's
on.
We're taking it down the middle.
We're ridiculous to incur additional expenses to determine with precision whose property it's on.
Yeah, it comes out of the same.
Right, all comes out of the same place in it.
Jeff?
Hi, Jeff Klein, 41 Homestead Lane. I just wanted to talk about the tree issue a little bit, too, because it was the guy next to me that cut down all his trees on the...
This week, yesterday, the day before. Yeah.
He just clear cut everything.
Yeah.
These are 80-year-old pines that he cut down in one day.
Mm. Hard
for no apparent reason. But also, just I understand everybody, Sarah, thanks for bringing that up. Because the trees are beautiful in town. I mean, they're just beautiful. So as a member of the public, I just want to voice my opinion that that's why people walk around town.
Mm-hmm.
They're beautiful in the fall. They're colorful. And to put that into the hands of somebody who could obviously care less is unacceptable, in my opinion. It needs to be. It's part of the town. Legally, it's part of their property, but it's part of the town. It's part of the essence is the right word, but that's the best word that I can think of. It's part of the essence of this town. People walk around in fall and spring. Now, even in winter, the trees are bare. But come fall, there's no place like the colors that come into this town.
You're just saying that because you have the most beautiful tree in town.
Which is phenomenal, that tree on Pine Drive, and there's so many others, you know, and to think that that tree could be cut down at random, a healthy, beautiful tree could just... homeowner just deciding when they wanted to cut it down and had the money to do it, seems almost criminal in its brutality to this town. On top of that, just to add a little more information to it, is we also have endangered species in the town, which are the birds. Not that everybody's in love with the turkey hawks, but you know, they've been in the town. Yeah, I mean, they've been here since the beginning. They've been here forever and ever, and they're endangered species. And they use the trees. They live in these trees. This is their home. They've been here for 100 years. You know, I don't know how long they've been here, forever. And you know, if it's any ammunition on top of everything else, substantial fines are. It's certainly you can't just take things away from endangered species. They need it. They're entitled to have a place to live under federal law. I don't know I don't know that much about it, but I know that they're allowed to have a place to live. And these turkey hawks could certainly be the saving grace for.
That's a good point.
Stopping
they
these people
live
from
across
cutting
the street,
down the trees.
You know, they live across the street from my house, and those huge trees.
Yeah, especially these 80-foot pines.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
their homes.
Yeah.
It really is their homes. I think anybody would find it. So when I mean, even the trees that he cut down was their home. They live in it. You know, now because it's covered, it's bare. Now you can find 10, 15. They're all over the town. You guys all know that.
Yeah.
So if it helps for ammunition to stop, I think the sooner the better, too, because apparently these people are just, and they just move in and just clear cut and then leave a year later and leaving the town in disarray for whatever their
I just want to point out, they're usually doing it so that they can have a fine-trimmed lawn.
Terrific.
Which has its own negative qualities to it in terms of fertilizer use and all kinds of runoff and you name it, and it is a habitat for many species, not just birds.
I think a lot of it was in response to Sandy, though. I mean, not, you know, it was in response to the hurricane Sandy. We had this thing of cutting down trees.
Oh, and I can appreciate
you know?
That, sure. Some are a danger.
It's kind of an overreaction.
I do believe some people just are trying to make it more like the suburbs, where they have like a manicured lawn, and last year new people moved in and took every tree. That's when I really started pondering this. Every tree in the backyard, every one, and went into the green belt a little. And then the mud, till they could put a lawn in, the mud that was running into the street, into the neighbor's yards, it was a debacle.
I can appreciate
and there's
that
just nothing there now, not a single tree.
Yeah, so the pines were, you know, branches will fall on the roots. I don't know how to go against, you know, if you do it and they say, well, you said I couldn't do it and now the branches hurt my roof. I don't know how to fight against that
but it's so rare,
first off, that a pine tree.
The ordinance usually puts an envelope around the building.
Right.
So you're allowed to cut without having whatever the tree size is within a certain distance around your whatever structures you have.
Right, and that's where I think
that's
or anything
how
that's
well,
that
the pine trees are the
hazardous.
Ones that they were planted so close to the houses.
Yeah.
That's where the problem exists.
Yeah.
They're very strong, healthy,
beautiful
trees. You know, of the habitat. They're really a big part of the habitat of this endangered species. So I just wanted to.
That's a good point. Thank you.
I hope it's protected somehow or other. It's really nice. On top of that, I just wanted to thank everybody for being on the council. I know you guys get a lot of grief, and it's hard, and I don't know why you volunteer to do it. It's beyond me that why you do it, but I appreciate you guys doing this, and somebody's got to do it in town.
Thank you.
Listening tonight. I just got back into town, so it's nice. Just all council. So. All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Wow. Anyone else? Bob?
I'm very happy, Bob Cragen, 7th School Lane. I'm very happy to see the report of the committee about the water. I think that there's a lot of things in that report that need to be amplified and looked into further. I'll try to keep my comments tonight to only the effect that I would like the committee please to approach me on my material that I have, but still it's not in the hands of the committee. To supply them with additional information, and you do, Greg.
You sent some stuff to me.
Pardon?
Yeah, you sent some stuff to me that we
and there's a whole bunch more.
As well, yeah. Okay. That's well, you can just keep emailing it to me.
Okay.
It's
a big loop. What I'd like to talk about tonight is what my perception is in terms of what the actual causes of the high pH were and how we're still at risk for those same causes to be recurrent today, even with the measures that were taken. The three causes were a failure of a check valve, a failure of the pump, and a suction effect caused by a height of the pump relative to the tank where the sodium hydroxide was put. The three measures that were taken to change that did, in fact, stop the actual causes of sodium hydroxide being put in our system right now, but they don't prevent that same cause happening again should the check valve fail, should the pump fail, or should there be another cause of a suction effect that could pull sodium hydroxide through the pump and the check valve.
Could I respond to that? Could I respond to what you just said? Okay.
The problem is that unless you actually go to a national expert, someone who does this design of these systems every day for a living, you don't really have a confidence or a handle on the fact that we're safe and that we're not at risk. The problem is that Carmella's pump guy or expert guy, water guy, and the DEP's three or four experts all come up with different answers as to what's causing the problem. Someone who is an academic is probably your best source, as an academic who has a track record for acting as a consultant in municipalities, large and small, and does this, he writes textbooks on this. There are people who do this every day for a living. Unless we get somebody like that in to consult with us, A, as to what we have right now, if it's safe, and I don't think it is, B, where do we go in the future, how do we go from here to make a good water system, and C, are we getting the best bang for our buck in terms of what we're putting into the project? How do we make sure that we're maximizing the effects of the money we're spending to get us safe water? There's always trade-offs. You can have everybody have bottled water delivered to their home, and that would be the best. I buy bottled water. I think other members of the council buy bottled water. The Borough Hall buys bottled water. What's wrong with this picture? That you shouldn't have to buy bottled water if we're spending, was it 400 something a month for water sewer? And we have all these very good wells and very good systems. The problem we have right now that needs to be addressed, actually, I would hope tonight, would be the fact that if there is a failure right now and this new alarm system goes off. Right now, I believe that the two operators are notified and Joe Trammell is notified. That's my best understanding, having attended the installation of the four-hour installation when all these people were there. The problem with that is the operators live several hours from town, and Joe may or may not be awake at 4 o'clock in the morning and be able to function, or be notified. It comes to a computer. There may be a cell phone notification, too. Joe may, or the people may have their cell phones off. If the cell phones are off, and there's a failure, and all of a sudden the pH goes to 12 again, guess what? The people at 4 o'clock in the morning, if this happens hypothetically, in the early morning when people go to make their coffee and they go to take their showers, they're going to get sick again. We had people who had skin problems. Joe cooked a soup with the stupid water for his mother. His mother got sick. Another guy had his kids go to the hospital. Mike knows all these things. Hold on, Mike. I'm not finished. The key point, though, is that we have to actually, tonight, make sure that there are systems in effect, protocols in effect, that will make sure that we shorten the time as much as is physically or practically possible.
When you're ready, I'll tell you about those protocols. But well, you continue.
Okay, I'm almost ready. We need to make sure that when there's an event, that there's a fail-safe system in place that will allow the people of Roosevelt, both the people who get the red phone alert and those who don't, and people who are just sleep in their beds at 4 o'clock in the morning with their cell phones turned off, can get notified so that they don't go use poisoned water. That happened on two events here, maybe three events in Roosevelt. Mike, yours.
Can I just say one thing real quick, Mike? Bob, do you know, or I'll understand that when this administration took over in August, that's the first thing we did, contact the DEP.
Right.
We've been working on this.
And the EPA.
We also contacted the EPA. I met with the EPA. That's the primary thing that we've begun to work on. It's not going to happen overnight, but we have continually, from the moment of the resignations, like 2 days later, we were calling the DEP. We were setting all this in motion so that we can address every problem and every flaw in the system.
I wanted to compliment you on your analysis, because just being notified by some alarm system that there's a failure doesn't provide a response, and it doesn't prevent the failure from happening. So exactly. What you're talking about is changing some system components so that the failure presumably has less chance of occurring.
Precisely.
One of the recommendations from our engineer was to have two check valves. She said she never
I've recommended that too.
Never installs a pump for a caustic that doesn't have two check valves. By the way, we didn't have a failure of a check valve. There was no check valve on it.
Well, I had heard that also, but I couldn't believe that.
There was no check valve installed on it.
If there was no check valve and Toby was in charge, that's possibly a criminal offense.
It's something that may make the report.
Somebody has to actually look at that. At a juncture in the investigation, we have not made any of those conclusions.
You have to ask DEP if there were protocols in place that demanded a check valve previously, and if there was a protocol in place and Toby didn't put it for whatever reason, then he's at risk for that.
I'm not commenting on that, but I'm just saying that borough engineers... The borough engineer's recommendations was to have two check valves installed on that unit, which would prevent some insurance, a backup check valve, in case one of the check valves fails.
Understood. The problem is that the check valves, and this is not just for myself, this is important to half a dozen people about this, the check valves fail in time because sodium hydroxide is very toxic and lethal to the material that the check valves are made of. So in time, always over and over again, these will fail. The only person I've gotten straight answers from in town when I go to find out what was going on was George Vasseur. I strongly recommend that everybody talk to George and find out from George what he believes actually happened. Because the answers that he's given me actually, in my best estimate, as someone who's worked professionally as an engineer for 15 years, makes sense. Everybody else are pulling ideas out of the hat and throwing them on the table and trying just to make the problem go away. The problem is the problem doesn't go away for the people in Roosevelt drinking the water. I still brush my teeth with it. I won't cook with it. I buy a bottle of water for cooking and for drinking, for coffee. But we need to have, the main point I'm making, Mike, it's on your desk, is how do we make sure that we're researching a full academic search, government laboratory search, government resources search. The NJDEP and Region 2 EPA are just two resources of government. They're not the resources of government. They're national laboratories that do this every day for a living. You need to find out where your resources are and apply them. Reach out for them. Talk to them. If you explain to people we've had two ammonia incidents is the way I'm characterizing it, even though DPA and EPA doesn't like to call it that. Anytime you have water that's over 11 coming out of your tap, that's the same or worse than real ammonia that you use to clean your dirty floors with. People were drinking this. People were showering with it. Kids were using this to clean their babies. So the point is that, A, you need to immediately make sure tonight that there is some kind of a real way to have the first aid squad with, speaker cars, going out round or...
Well, actually, Bob, I discussed that with the DEP when they were here, because we discussed alternative ways of informing the residents besides cell phones and landlines and texts. And I said it's kind of rudimentary, but we did actually used to go around on a bullhorn.
That's what you need.
And they said that was absolutely fine, that was an acceptable way. Sure. Or we also discussed having a block captain.
That's a better way.
And that person knocks on every door.
At this point in time, the DEP's protocol that they mandated in light of the incident is that the borough employees go door to door.
Right.
And that's good, provided you have somebody...
Code red, immediately, there's a procedure for that.
You need a master list.
Yeah, because you could wake up in the middle of the night and get a drink, go to the bathroom, get a drink, and not look at
yourself.
The DEP was aware
of that, and they require door-to-door.
There has to be a handshake on the door-to-door that somebody is in Borough Hall checking out with a list, master list of all residents, not just voters, full list of all residents.
Mr. Reagan, let me just put it this way, and I know you're very concerned. I thank you very much for your concern. I think it was actually helped the committee, and I think it's pushed this issue forward, quite frankly.
That's what I'm trying.
The borough's primary concern at this moment is making sure that we get into compliance with some basic reporting requirements. That being said, what
I'm laughing though, because that's part of an expression of being counter approach, and it's a valid approach. We have, I think, liability, perhaps even hundreds of thousands.
Let me be more succinct. The governing body is very interested, and not interested, is
working for. Yeah,
will is right on the same page as you.
Right. Good.
They do not operate the plan on a daily basis.
Right.
And the messaging that talks here, clearly from what I described earlier, is not making it to the ground level. So that's what the administration committee's investigation is about, is understanding where we know what we're supposed to do. We talked to DB for 7 hours about it. We've had multiple correspondence and emails all over the place, and it appears to be taking, in this governing body's view, and I shouldn't say that, in the administration committee's view, far too long. So that's what this is about, and we're hoping to move with due speed by the next council meeting to get the situation in place that makes it happen immediately.
I appreciate those thoughts, and I concur with everything you said. That said, tonight, 4 o'clock in the morning, the PH goes to 12. Who is going door to door? Who is going to actually start that? Where is the phone tree? Where are the block captains? Where is the handshake and the check off for everybody to notify?
Within the next 11 days, we will have those answers after the interview of Mr. Moore, who is responsible for providing that protocol to the DEP.
And honestly, Bob,
no,
if it happened tonight, Joe would get the call, or I would get the call. Everyone knows I'm up, and Joe never turns off his cell. And between all of us, we would start going out door to door. I mean, if it happened tonight, before that protocol is in place,
that's very reassuring.
Recently.
More reassuring would be to know that there is a master list of all the citizens, with all the different forms of communicating with them. There is a master plan to have block captains or a dozen people who volunteer
to
get a water bill. We have a list of everyone who gets a water bill.
He's saying within the next 11 days. But
everyone is in town, kids too, babies. Not just the owners of the houses and the water bill. You actually need a physical list of everybody who lives in town. And you need to make sure that each person is informed, don't use that water. You need some kind of a check-off or a legal term of certification. I have talked to so-and-so, checked off, done.
Right, but Bob, what Greg Cannon is telling you is that will be
it's
in place.
Works.
So if it happened tonight, we would handle it. But if it happens,
my point to you is there's no one in this room at the moment who is directly responsible for making that happen. The licensed operator is responsible for making that happen. This body provides oversight for the licensed operator. And so we're investigating what is going on down there and why these sorts of conversations aren't making it to the ground level in the speed that clearly is necessary, given that people honestly, the borough got very lucky in the summertime.
Yeah.
That the people, because somebody didn't get seriously injured.
Really.
But some
people went to the hospital, some people went
that's a
it's very
neat. Finish this, yes, like, what I'm asking you if you can is assign this as a project to someone to handle it. I would suggest Robin, if she's willing.
Thanks, Bob.
Mr. Craig, what I'm telling you is that under New Jersey law, it is the obligation of the licensed operator to do exactly what you're talking about.
Can I suggest read the fine print in the DEP reports? I don't mean to correct you, Greg, but my understanding is completely different. My understanding is the licensed operator does not, and it's specifically mentioned in several DEP reports, the licensed operator does not take care of the red phone or the dispersal of information. That's entirely 100% the borough. The licensed operator is the one who's supposed to sound the alarm. At that point, you're correct. But sounding the alarm, telling the borough that something's wrong, dispersing that information is entirely responsible.
You're confusing the procedure with the law. The law is the licensed operator's responsible for making those notifications. The procedure at present is that the licensed operator is not in charge of the code red system of the borough. The DEP has acknowledged that fact, and there was certification signed by all employees to the effect of what the protocol is.
With all respect, that's not my reading of the Australia. I'll dig it up and read it.
I understand.
It's a borough responsibility once they get the alarm to get the word out. But we can show you the proof. The point is, either way, it doesn't matter. What matters is to make sure that
Bob, Bob, safe. Bob, at the mic.
With that, I agree with you.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
And then
we're with you.
Good.
We agree with you.
Sounds good. Yeah. Beyond that, at some point, I want my money back for my stupid water bills where Toby dinged me for broken water meters when it wasn't broken. You know the story. At some point, I'll let everybody into the secrets here. But Toby basically leads a rich fantasy life about many things, one of which was the condition of my water meter. Sorry.
Thank you, Bob.
Sharon Walsh, 23 North Valley. I'll be brief because it is late. I just have two things I wanted to ask about. One was the presence of traffic cones all over town. What's up with that?
That is to identify. Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. You wanted.
It's in case of snow. Those are spots that it could affect the plow.
Okay.
They so identify manhole covers, things like that that could.
Okay.
That
someone told me we were getting 100 different speed bumps, and I'm like, I don't
know. Yeah. It looks a little strange, but it's one of those things where like the rate that snowstorms are happening.
Yeah. They can ruin a plow if the operator doesn't have something to remind him, because snow covers everything, including speed bumps. And it can take your teeth out if you're operating the plow and all of a sudden you hit a manhole cover.
That makes sense. Okay,
I was debating like taking.
No, we're not putting speed bumps all over town. Rest assured.
We had to replace the blade on the plow. It was in deplorable condition. Hitting.
That's fine. That totally makes sense. I just was wondering because I was just there. I'm like, what's going on?
Probably, I guess in April they'll be. End of April.
Okay. My second thing is I don't. My second thing is I really don't care who's appointed to the Environmental Commission. That my term wasn't extended. It's not going to change my work with the Environmental Commission. Everyone knows that that's my heart and passion. I've done that work long before I came to Roosevelt. It is one of the reasons I came to Roosevelt. But whatever, titles don't mean that much. But I was interested in getting more information on the mosquito spraying because some people, including myself, have put in butterfly gardens this year as part of the Monarch pledge that the mayor took 2 years ago, probably. So it would be important for us to protect the plants because the Monarch butterflies lay their eggs, so we would have caterpillars on those plants, and if they're going to be dropping insecticide from the sky, that could ruin everything. So is there a way for us to get notified when that's happening?
They do notify
on the date that they're coming into town.
They have helicopters that come in and they do notify us.
Yeah.
We could put it on the website, probably.
Yeah, I was just
that would be very helpful because I know Stacey's got her stuff, I've got my stuff, and other people probably do as well. So
just in case.
I found them to be very, very responsive to particular situations like that. If you call the number that's on the county website and you tell them like you're blocking lot, and that you don't want it there or whatever, they are very, or if you want them to come specifically to your property to do, if you have a problem, I found they're extremely accommodating.
I thought they were flying over and spraying insecticide. No?
It's much more of a specific, it's not like they just fly over the town and spray it like from 30,000 feet. It's a very, it's a more.
They have the real wetland areas identified, and they just do the wetlands. Yeah. They don't go over, they won't go over residential houses.
No. Unless you ask them, then they'll come on the property and they'll actually come physically and spray if you have a particularized problem like a drainage issue in the back.
Right.
I found that really responsive to what you want.
Would you like a phone number where you can ask them questions about it?
Sure. Can you just read it into the record?
Yes.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Anyone has a question?
Also, I'd like to mention, I'm pretty positive that if they're spraying for a mosquito larvae, it probably shouldn't affect caterpillar larvae. If it does, then maybe look into the pesticide specifically and see if it affect them.
They're sensitive and that's why they're dying.
Yeah, it depends on the pesticide use. Yeah, a lot more specific, some aren't so specific.
Right, this is the Monmouth County Mosquito Control Division phone number 732-542-3630.
Thank you.
Mike.
Yeah, they're part of the county health department now also, which provides our health services.
Anyone who hasn't spoken? Okay, Bob.
Very fast. I believe, and you can verify this with Toby, that anybody on the council who wants to can have a sign-in to the website of the machine that's monitoring the pH and the chlorine in real time. And
as of January 23rd, that's true.
Yeah. And you can be able to have a sign-in, though you can't change anything, but you actually be able to see if there's any problem. So if you taste funny taste in the water, you have some kind of funny color in the water, you can immediately see if that's caused by a misfunction in the chlorine system or the pH.
Right.
That said, the last thought I'll leave you with is I believe that our copper has not, and copper and lead has not been tested in 3 years. They're tested every 3 years, and it's actually site-specific. And again, we need to go to a national expert who can do this every day for a living and tell us what we actually have as a problem or not. Not a problem.
Did you say it has to be every 3 years? Or
that's right now it's mandated by the state every 3 years. That's not sufficient. If you have a circumstance change, they change a section of pipe that has lead in it, or they...
But if there's a known problem, they test it at very higher intervals.
No, there's never been a problem because I don't think it's ever been tested for a problem.
Well, that might be a fair point.
you don't have a problem, that's called the ostrich defense. But now the non-ostrich defense, let's get an expert in and let's do it and find out what's happening.
Anyone else? Okay, public comment is closed at 9:37. Anyone like to adjourn?
And I'd just like to make one comment about everything that we just did and the public comments. I thought the public comments were excellent, very well informed, very useful to us. I also like to compliment our borough attorney on pulling together this report and doing, I think, an excellent job, and a good job of reading, too. Fascinating reading. But it was really well done and pulled together, and the committee did a really great job. So I'm really happy with the way it worked out. And it's still open. It's an open investigation. Yeah. So.
And it's hard. I mean, he literally just started to come up to speed on everything and get a grasp of
I'll
the
tell
situation.
You, I've never walked into a committee meeting in a governing body where everyone has tabulated. One guy walks in with thumb drives, one lady walks in with tabulated binder,
you'll
and the other guy walks in with the history of the world of the borough. It's pretty.
You'll find that
pretty well.
Is unique in many, many ways. It really is.
And cookies.
Right.
Yes.
Not coffee.
The cookies were phenomenal, by the way. Thank you, Robin.
No, Mike did not bring his coffee, but
no.
Robin brought the cookies.
See, I knew there would be something negative about that committee,
no,
but I'll bring it next time.
It's really,
but not from the committee.
It's different.
Had I known there would be
it's
cookies,
really
I would have brought coffee.
Very
too.
Impressive.
I agree. I commend Mr. Cannon as well
thank
as
you,
the
Mary.
Committee.
Yep. Thank you.
Okay. Do we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Without objection.
All in favor?
Without
aye.
Objection.
Yep.
We are out at 9:39.
You want to collect these, right?
Yes, he does.
Greg?
Yes.
Greg? 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 Oh, Greg. You need to collect these, right?
Yes.
Oh, you do?
You better. Yes. You better make sure nobody walks out.
Three copies of these will be with the borough clerk. If you want to look at it, just come in here. But I don't want them leaving the building. That's all. Right. And if the administration committee has a meeting, the clerk will have copies for you guys to refer to. That's okay.
Yeah.
I don't want this in there at all. I want
to.
I want
to. I will send you copies of the